their part to change the world.
Sister Mary Ellen Manns works in Sudan.
I just love working with children, and the kids love me. To hear them laugh and play, it's helping them to grow. And I keep telling them that, you know, you go to school so that you grow in all the ways God wants you to grow. I'm Mary Knoll's sister, Mary Ellen Manns. I guess I'm doing my part to change the world.
Mary Knoll and you can change the world. To get a subscription to Mary Knoll Magazine, in English or Spanish, or to find out how you can help, call us. 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And check out our website, www.marynoll.org. One world, one mission. Mary Knoll.
Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, help me, sisters. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, help me, sisters. Please do not beg hope for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Saying that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the low main.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you listen?
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equality.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400. That's my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. Ooh, you need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609, that would be my fax. And, you need to get to me. There are amazing things going on. Amazing things going on. And where do I begin? Where do I begin? I don't know. I had some strange dreams last night. I watched Lost last night, my favorite television show. In favor, I love Lost. I love Lost, and I love Invasion that follows after it. And the episode of Lost dealt with one of the characters, Saeed, trying to get information out of a new character that they believe are from the bad guys. And the premise of the story was that they lie, the bad guys do, the others, as they call them. They lie before they tell you anything. They lie. And a chilling moment in the show last night was when this other character kept asking Saeed, "What is your name? What is your name?" And Saeed told him, "My name is Saeed Sakafar. And I am a torturer." And prior to me watching Lost last night, it was a chilling moment. Because he was the character Saeed was just disconnected. Was it from what he was doing? It was almost like it was an outer body experience of his, as he just beat this man because he didn't believe him. And prior to watching Lost, I had made the mistake. Because there's really only so much that the mind really wants to allow in. I made the mistake of photographs from Abu Ghraib. I made a mistake of looking at the new photographs from Abu Ghraib, and hence the bad dreams that I had last night. These photographs are beyond the pale. I wonder if any of these men come home, any of these men who do these things to other men, if they come home to their loved ones and they say, "My name is Corporal Robert J. Smith, and I am a torturer." I wonder if they come home and say these things. Because the photographs I don't know that there's a word in the English language to express an accurate description of what this means, that one human being can do this to another human being. You see, the character in Lost, Saeed, he became a torturer at the behest, at the request of the American military in the first Gulf War. And he agreed to torture another Iraqi man. And he agreed to torture him because this Iraqi man based on U.S. intelligence, had destroyed Saeed's village, and Saeed didn't know that, had killed Saeed's loved ones. So there was a human connection, if you will. Saeed was angry at this man and wanted to, and felt comfortable in punishing him. And, of course, when the character got to the island of Lost, he also felt like he was protecting himself in torturing the others, if you will. Why do the men torture these men at Abu Ghraib? There is no human connectiveness to this. There isn't. The stuff that they connect to this, what do they tell them? And what do you really believe? I mean, what do they really believe? You believe that this 14-year-old that you're hanging from their feet upside down, naked, blindfold, and you're beating him, do you really believe that he bombed, that he drove the plane into the Twin Towers? Of course you don't. The people that drove the plane into the towers are dead. Do you believe that this 21-year-old Iraqi man that you snatched up out of his village, his city, his home, from his wife and his children, and you believe that he dropped gas on America? Oh, well, wait, they didn't do that, did they? My question is, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, my question is this. Where does the false energy to take you to a place of torture come from? Because none of these men did the 9/11 thing. None of them did it. It wasn't Iraq. It wasn't Iraqis. So how do you get whipped up into a frenzy? I mean, I understand two things. I understand that Lost is a television show. But I also understand that the show drew a connection between either direct physical danger that the character Saeed was facing, or direct personal loss that he suffered, that allowed him to get to the place of this. We took, in our names, in American names, our government snatched up over 500 men and boys, and they took them to a place outside of the jurisdiction of the United States, in order that the laws of the United States would not apply to what they did to them. Our government calculated and said, we're taking them here so we don't have any stinking constitution standing in the way of us pulling fingernails out of men's hands. Of making men sexually assault one another, of defiling the Quran. That's what our government did in our name. And my question is, how do you get to the place as an American? And let's be clear, we lead soft lives compared to the rest of the world. How many Americans out there have modern-day images of their village or their town being blown off the face of the map by an enemy? How many of you have that image? If your loved one died and some other person from another nation killed him, it's because your person left the soil of the United States to go to that the person who killed them country. Outside of the what was it? Was it 2,000 people that died in the Trade Center? Was it just 2,000? What do we, and America has moved past that. Witnessed by our own good government not paying these people their money. Georgia's moved past that pain. So we don't have any modern day, you killed my grandmother, I held her in my arms and I felt her as her life poured out of her onto the ground. You did this to my grandma. 99.9% of Americans don't have that modern day image in their head to give rise to rage. So my question is, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, where does it come from? What kind of wicked, twisted, awful, hate-driven energy, where does it come from? Help me. Help me. Help me. I'm looking at these pictures from Abu Ghraib and it's so sexually perverted. The things that men are doing to other men. Where does it, the knowledge of that, the energy of that, the willingness to do that, where does it come from? There are pictures, these new pictures. 60 previously unpublished photographs. These are the pictures our government has been fighting to keep from us. They include photographs of 6 corpses. They include pictures of burns and wounds from shotgun pellets, a la Cheney, I guess. These are astounding times, troubling times, the wicked times that we live in. There are pictures of men. How do you have so many photographs of naked men? The perversity is shocking. And the understand. That the moment that or the time, the place, the energy that gave birth to the creation of these photographs began with a calculated, illegal, cynical, criminal act. Let's move them to Cuba, where Americans can't get to them, where their lawyers can't get to them, where the press can't get to them, in order that we can get to them. Three cheers for the red, white, and blue. Right? You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Liz Brown.
Brother Al, good morning.
You know, about 3 weeks ago, Liz, in the Sunday Parade magazine, they asked the question, who is the world's worst dictator? Yeah. I was thinking about what you was talking about today. You know, I asked myself that question yesterday. That this world has a bunch of hypocrites in it, Liz, especially our government. And the cruelty that men will do to one another for no reason whatsoever is questionable. And I don't want to say all men, but do you know how cruel in this world that we live in, and I'm going to have to say this, most of them are white that practice these, how would you say, these evildoers. I too question, where does it come from? In the prisons, over in Cuba, what are we doing? Are we really trying to bring peace and democracy to the world, Liz? That we would create all these enemies? Don't you know these people are wondering where their loved ones are at? What's happening to them? I heard that they had requested that all of them be let go from Guantanamo.
The UN has said that they need to be let go.
Yes, the UN, and I heard my government say they're not going to let them go.
I got to roll.
Thank you.
We're taking a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with me.
Why don't we?
Good morning, St. Louis, 32 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by TomTom.com. Northbound Route 3 at Chain of Rocks Bridge, there's an accident that's been cleared, but there are no reports of any delays at this hour. Eastbound 70 at Forestell, look for an accident reportedly off the roadway. Drivers are slowing down to take a look. Northbound 55 between Imperial Main and Union, everything is on the move. Eastbound 70 between 370 and 94, look for normal traffic there. Eastbound 40 between Chesterfield Airport and 141, look for no problems to report there. Westbound 270 from Chain of Rocks Bridge all the way into 367 looks good. Northbound 270 from Gravoy to 44, slight delays this hour. Westbound 255 from Jefferson Barracks all the way into 55 looks good. Westbound 44 at 270, look for an accident reportedly on the shoulder. Westbound 40 between Laclede Station, there's an accident, and that's a vehicle hitting a guardrail. Eastbound 44 at Bowles and Elm, no problems there. Westbound 5570 at 4th Street all the way on to the PSB, look for slow traffic there. Westbound 64 at Illinois Route 3 all the way into the Poplar Street Bridge looks good. And westbound Kingbridge traffic from 5570 onto Laclede's Landing, expect normal traffic. East Madison at Pullman Place in Kirkwood, there's an accident involving a vehicle that has struck a street light, so use caution as you roll around this hour. There's also some low-lying fog in some of the low-lying areas, so slow down a little bit and take your time. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by TomTom.com. TomTom Go is your portable everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, windy, areas of fog in the morning, showers, rain, and thunderstorms are likely by the afternoon with a high around 60. This evening, windy, much colder, becoming partly cloudy late. Rain likely early in the evening with the snow mixed in later. Little or no snow accumulation is expected. The low, however, should be in the lower 20s. For Friday, mostly cloudy, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy by the afternoon with a high in the lower 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy with a low around 16. Then on Saturday, mostly cloudy, once again with a high in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 49 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 48 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 weekday afternoons on AM 920 WGNU. Then, Stay tuned for Dave Linehan with today's solutions as he discusses what matters most to you.
Are those wedding bells I'm hearing? You know what that means. No, not Valentine's Day. It's the St. Clair Bridal Fest Spring Review at St. Clair Square, February 18th and 19th. Whether you're planning an entire wedding or just looking for ideas for your wedding planner, the St. Clair Bridal Fest Spring Review is the place to be. Bridal Fest will have vendors and exhibitors from all areas of the bridal and party industry. See the latest fashions while you explore a variety of displays that are sure to inspire. Take a break in the center court and enjoy the music from Night Magic Entertainment. Don't forget to stop by the Bridal Registry, sign up for the mailing list, and pick up your Bridal Fest bingo card. Fill in the spaces and you could win one of thousands of dollars in prizes to be given away all weekend long. That's the St. Clair Bridal Fest, February 18th and 19th, hosted by St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. Sponsored by Patty Cakes, Night Magic Entertainment, and Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Get more details at sbcshows.com. This is a Specialized Promotional Concepts production.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested, and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues in the African American History Series. On Saturday, February 18th at 12 noon at the Missouri History Museum in Forest Park, explore the historical relationships between various racial and ethnic groups in St. Louis by taking part in the guided Missouri History Museum tour, St. Louis in Black and White. After the tour, celebrate the life of late civil rights pioneer Rosa Parks in the dramatic play Rosa Parks and the Montgomery Bus Boycott, performance at 2 p.m. Tickets are $5 per person for the general public and $3 per person for Missouri Historical Society members. Reservations are required. Call 361-9017 or go to www.mohistory.org. What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Cafeteria line in Chicago. Fat man in front of me. He's calling black people trash to his children. And he's the only trash here I see. And I'm thinking this man wears a white hood. Night when his children should see, but they'll slip through their windows and they'll see.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. A revolution at LizBrown.com is my email. Archive shows, that's at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Get up, get to me. Glenn.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Good morning.
Just to tie in some of the things you were saying along with my comment. I want to ask you a question. Where is the moralist, Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, the so-called moral majority on this Abu Ghraib situation? I mean, they should be outraged of the potential homosexual depictions that they cause these people to be in. You know, and they supposedly be such against it, but you don't hear them. And they're people that they put in office is depicting these so-called horrible acts. That they, you know what I'm saying, that they stand up on so vehemently, but you don't hear anything from them with this evil that these guys are doing. And secondly, if you take that all the way back to New York, where those officers took that plunger and put it in a place where it shouldn't have been, and I think the man's name was
Amadou Diallo.
Yes. And that all ties into this type of sickness that I think that this country, basically promotes. What else can you say? They took pictures of it. They keep it. They promote it. As a way of, in that case, governing, controlling, getting information. I mean, they use it to their own advantage. And also, my actual comment was about Dick Cheney and this incident with this man and this lie that they tell about his heart.
Well,
heart attack.
Wait a minute. When Dick Cheney shot a 79, because the man's going to be 79 next month. So for all practical purposes, a 79-year-old man in the face when he did that?
Liz, he didn't shoot him just in the face.
But I understand. Go ahead.
Yeah, he shot him in his heart, and that's the comment I want to make. They lied and made it seem like the man just had a little heart attack from a little BB, but, you know, Chris Matthews pointed out that heart attacks don't come by a shot. They come by a blood clot. and say, this guy had a BB in his heart. He had a heart problem. He shot him in the heart. You say, why didn't they say that? You know, again, it goes back to the point that they try to cover up almost everything that they do. And it's just a bunch of lies that come out of this. This is one of the most lied administrations that I've ever seen in my life.
Thanks for your call, Glenn.
Thanks.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Dick Cheney had his press conference yesterday. It was on, of course, the Fox News network. And he was interviewed by Brett Hume. And, when you think about it, Brett Hume interviewing Dick Cheney, it's kind of like Bonnie interviewing Clyde, isn't it? Two criminals chatting it up. Two defenders of lies chatting it up. You know, Bonnie says to Clyde, baby, you think you did anything wrong? Clyde says back to Bonnie, sweetie, you know I didn't do anything wrong. Bonnie to Clyde, I love you, baby. Clyde to Bonnie, love you right back. That's what the interview with Dick Cheney and Brett Hume was all about. It was a love fest, and you weren't going to get anything significant out of it, except Bonnie's great and Clyde's great. We have so much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Dick Cheney said, I was just awful when I realized I shot my friend. It was the most horrible day to date. It was kind of like when I was in Nam. No, I wasn't in Nam, was I? No, I wasn't in. No, I don't have that memory of. Huh. Now let me just throw something else at you, because I'm telling you, I love Lost. I love the show, the television show Lost. And when the character in Lost was trying to get the truth out of this person, you know, you got to pay attention. And you got to ask quick questions, and you got to fire at people, and you got to press and press and press. And you got to listen very closely to what they say. And one of the questions that the Saeed character was asking this other person, asking him to find out the truth, he said, because the other character said that his wife died and that he buried his wife. And Saeed said, how deep was the hole? How many shovels of dirt did you use to put into the grave? And the guy didn't know. And Saeed said, if you loved someone, if you were burying the woman you loved, you'd know in your mind, you could see how deep the hole was. You would remember every shovel of dirt that you put on top of her body if you buried the woman you loved. You'd remember everything about it. How much rain fell, the color of the sky. You'd remember all of that. So you have to listen very carefully to see if folks are lying to you. I listened to Dick Cheney. He said he was so terrified. He was so struck. He was so emotionally wrought by what he had done to his friend, really. Then how did you think fast enough to say, we're not saying anything to the press? How did you think fast enough to pass the ball to Armstrong, the chick that the your operative that was there on at the canned hunting farm where you were? You weren't overwrought. You were not overwrought with emotion. You weren't upset, all that upset that you shot your friend in the heart and the face. That a 79-year-old man was laying on the ground with buckshot to his heart and his face. Because you had the mind to plan covering your behind. No mind, my friend's face and heart. My behind is what needs to be covered. Car phone.
Good morning, Liz.
George, good morning.
I didn't see the whole interview. I just saw just a snippet of it here and there, but I'm positive. I'll bet he didn't ask the question, why didn't you answer the door when the sheriff's deputy came to the door, huh?
Yep.
Thanks.
I think it was kind of hard to weave himself to the door.
Yeah. You being an attorney, can you verify this for me? Somebody told me a long time ago that the sheriff in a county is the highest official in the county. I mean, he can go out and arrest a judge. He's got that kind of authority. Nobody in a county has more authority than the sheriff. Do you happen to know if that's
that? I don't know. I do not know.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is that a sheriff has more authority than a Secret Service agent.
And a
Secret Service agent turned them away. How you do that?
Isn't that something? Right, right. That shouldn't have happened. And I think the sheriff himself should have been there, but he sent a deputy, so I guess they weren't trying too hard.
Scared to death.
Yeah.
Scared to death.
That Britt Hume, I've seen him on TV enough to know that he's just I don't know what you call him.
Lapdog? Lapdog?
A journalistic prostitute is what he is. That's about the best term for him.
All right, George.
Yep.
Thank
okay.
you.
Hang in there, Liz.
All right. Listen, folks, we're taking a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Just a little bit longer.
Dateline Damascus. Syria should be the next spot to keep your eye on. The government there has decided to change all of its foreign currency transactions to euros from the U.S. dollar. The head of the Commercial Bank of Syria, Durayd Durgum, says this move involves billions of dollars. The move comes at a time when the United States has been pushing hard for an international investigation into Syria's role in the assassination of Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri last year. A Mideast economist says the move appears to be insurance to make sure their foreign assets stay safe from being frozen in the event that a freeze is placed upon them. And Dateline San Francisco. A subsidiary of Halliburton Corporation, Kellogg Brown & Root, has been awarded a $385 million contract to build detention and processing centers for the Department of Homeland Security as part of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement facilities in case of an emergency situation. The contract is good for 1 year, but has 4 one-year options and is effective immediately. It reportedly will provide for facilities to handle an emergency influx of immigrants into the U.S., but can also take care of any new detention needs that Homeland Security may deem necessary. Kellogg Brown & Root, the construction arm of Halliburton, has charge of the contract. Curiously enough, there's a piece of legislation called the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act that allows state governors and public health officials to quarantine people deemed to harbor infectious diseases that could pose a threat to the general public. There are other provisions of this act, however, that border on encroachment of civil liberties. Former Attorney General John Ashcroft had also drafted a plan that would allow for unlimited detention of citizens in the name of combating terrorism, a move currently being played out in the case of Jose Padilla. The Reagan administration had crafted plans in the early 80s for imposing martial law, and one of the reasons cited for use of internment was to restrict national opposition to a U.S. military invasion abroad. Talk of detention camps began again back in the 70s when fears of a national uprising by black militants were expressed. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Washers, dryers, TVs, radios. Remember radios? You can get one of those, too. You can get your treadmill. You can get your tools. You can get your tires. You can get your tractors. It's springtime's coming up. Get your tractors. Where? At your neighborhood Sears. Don't drive to the mall.
Support the city of St. Louis. Go to the only full-service Sears in the city of St. Louis at 3425 Union, corner of Union and Natural Bridge. The best customer service in town. Jerome Williams, I'm Liz Brown. And when you go to Sears at Union and Natural Bridge and you talk to Jerome Williams, you tell him I told you to.
Science or religion, Republican or Democrat, politics, education, crime, or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies. What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan, on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6.
This is Father John Couture. St. Paul tells us that love is patient. The service of love often takes the form of waiting, which can feel like a slow death at times. The earth waits for rain, the rosebuds wait for warmth, and the soul patiently waits for union with God. Pray for the grace to be patient. This is Father John Couture inviting you to visit my website, messengerofjoy.com. Thank you, and God bless you.
We've found another good old boy network at work inside FEMA. And it's a major reason why the people of New Orleans had no chance to get any meaningful help after Hurricane Katrina. Former FEMA director Joe Alabaugh and the man he selected as his replacement, Michael Brown, knew nothing about dealing with disasters. And associates described both of them as being ethically challenged. So how did they get their jobs? Another fascinating story you will only hear on The Wake Up Call with investigative journalist Russ Baker, coming up Thursday at 9 with Liz Brown.
The people, the issues affecting your life, right here, right now, on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Good morning, Liz. How are you doing today?
I'm outstanding.
I was worried if Teddy could do this to a friend, I wonder what he could do to an enemy.
Yep. You're absolutely right. Duck.
Definitely.
Duck.
I have another comment.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching Democracy Now! Yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And it seems that Amy was connecting the dots between Armstrong, Cheney, and Winnington.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that Miss Armstrong is a lobbyist.
She's a lobbyist, and she's also connected to Halliburton.
Yes.
She is connected to Halliburton. She was at Halliburton when she was a director at Halliburton when Cheney was hired.
Yeah, that's exactly what she said too.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your time.
Michael, thank you for your call.
All right, thank you. Take care.
All right, 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. You're on the Wake Up Call.
How you doing this morning, Liz?
It's Peter. Good morning.
I see where the U.S. is slamming Australia television for putting out what they call old Abu Ghraib photos.
If I haven't seen them and you haven't seen them, how are they old?
That was the very question I was going to ask you.
Who are they old to?
But, you know, this. Now, also, you have to look at this both ways. It may be an intention in order to incite.
Yeah.
So that they give an excuse to invade Iraq.
You mean Iran?
Iran, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you heard the World News report a few minutes ago that Joe did about Syria is switching to euros. So they can't snatch it.
I understand the U.S. have about close to 200 military bases in over 140 countries around the world with a military expense budget fastly approaching $1 trillion per year.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the movie Why We Fight?
I have not.
This movie starts off with 1961 with Dwight Eisenhower addressing a committee saying that we must fight the military-industrial complex. Then on another thing, it has John McCain, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Saying how wonderful that the United States must have to start wars in order to spread democracy.
And how's that working out for us?
Well, we shall see.
Uh-huh.
But look at that film. It's very interesting.
I will.
Thank you very much.
All right. 454-0400 is my phone number. Deborah.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm outstanding.
I wanted to get off the subject just a little bit with Dick Cheney. I wanted to throw the question out there. When you get your electric turned on, do they do any investigation? Has anybody been through that? Because I'm trying to find out what kind of investigation they're doing. At this point, I'm speaking with the electric people to try to find out, because my son was getting some electric in. They got his social, told him to fax his ID, and then they had to speak with the landlord, and then they had to do all of this, and then they said it'd take about 72 hours for an investigation, and I'm trying to find out what kind of investigation they're doing, because I've never been through that.
I haven't either.
I was wondering if it was something new that they were going through, so now I'm at the process of trying to get some answers through the electric company, but I'm not being successful, so I was just wanted to throw that out to see if anybody else been through it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. Mark.
Yes, I would just like to say, you know, if you remember back when Clinton was doing all that, his little thing he was doing, and how it was nobody's business what that man does in his personal life.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, this is a personal matter. This
How is this a state matter? So if I shoot somebody in my house, that's a personal matter.
It's not a government matter.
Okay, so then I shouldn't expect the police, I shouldn't expect the judges, and I shouldn't expect the press. I have a right to keep the press, the judges, and the police out of my house because it's a personal matter, right?
No, I'm not talking about the police.
Okay, why?
I'm talking about his obligation to release it to the press.
Well, wait a minute. You are an elected official. You've been involved in a shooting of another person. I pay your bills. You've harmed another human being by shooting them, and you're saying that you don't have to tell the American people that you shot somebody? Get out of here. Of course you do. Of course you do.
Well,
let me ask you this. If Bill Clinton had shot somebody, what would the Republican Party be, and not told anybody, and told the press that they didn't have a right to ask about that? Huh? Come on.
A man accidentally shot his friend. It is a personal matter. Thanks.
Okay, well, then I'll tell the cops that next time you shoot somebody, see how that works out for you. Ain't that some stuff? It's a personal matter because my personal bullets went into somebody's personal body. It wasn't at your house. It was at somebody else's house. Ain't that some stuff? Okay, you and me are going to agree that this is just going to stay between the two of us. Okay, wipe that blood up. Wipe that blood up. This is just going to stay between the two of us. Ain't that some stuff? These people are clowns and robots. It's just a personal matter what happened. You didn't talk to the police. You refused to talk to the police because it's a personal matter. After you shot somebody. Damn, when do you have to tell somebody something? When do you have to tell somebody something? You're on a wake-up call. Are you going to talk to me? Tell me something's bright. Come on. Tony?
Yeah.
What you got?
Well, I'm just trying to say that it's a personal matter because, I mean, there's hunting accidents that happen all the time.
And
you only see it in the newspaper for one day.
Okay, and so your complaint is that the amount of time people in the press are talking about this, and so a person who commits a crime has the right, or shoots somebody.
It's not a crime.
Okay,
how
a person.
Is it a crime? It was a hunting accident.
A person
who happens every day.
A person
every
who shoots somebody.
Happen, yes.
A person who shoots somebody has a right to say, the press can only talk about this for 15 minutes.
in America. You all have been so brainwashed, so willingly brainwashed, that you are buying into the idea that there's no freedom of the press. That the press only gets to talk about what Dick Cheney says they can talk about, or what Boy George says that they can talk about. Of course the press is going to talk about something that hasn't happened in almost 200 years, that the Vice President of the United States shot somebody in the face and the heart. Unless you want to live I don't even know a country that would not report that story. They made a fool out of you. They made a fool out of you. And is it a crime or not? I don't know. We got to wait till all the facts come in. Taking a break. We'll be back.
To the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Sorry, Whittington. Cheney still thinks, though, that he made the right decisions waiting to tell the news media and letting the owner of the ranch do it. Whittington is on the mend, but not completely out of the woods.
It was a scary time for Whittington's friends and family when they learned a piece of birdshot had caused a minor heart attack on Tuesday. But by Wednesday, says Dr. David Blanchard,
all of his vital signs continued to show a stable trend, not towards deterioration either downward or upward.
The next step is expected to be an advanced CAT scan that will pinpoint the birdshot that's touching Whittington's heart. Still, the doctors do not plan to go in after it. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Corpus Christi, Texas.
Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff gets another grilling today from a Senate committee. Yesterday was no picnic for him.
The testimony came on the same day that a Republican House Select Committee released its blistering report on Katrina. That report specifically pointed to a failure of leadership, saying that deaths and suffering could have been prevented if federal officials had reacted more quickly.
ABC's Liz Morlantes in Washington. A bill to renew the Patriot Act should make it through the Senate with little trouble today. Modest civil liberties protections have been added to the measure. And Wisconsin Democrat Russell Feingold says he'll try to attach language to curb government power. Neil Entwistle returning to the U.S. The British native arrived yesterday. He'll be arraigned today. He's charged in the murders of his American wife and their infant daughter. The bodies were found at the couple's home in suburban Boston. Well, you can expect even longer lines at the places that sell Powerball tickets. No one won last night's $300 million jackpot. Saturday's drawing in the multi-state lottery will be worth at least $365 million. This is ABC News.
Hey, it's John Madden here to give you what every homeowner wants, a great excuse to go to the hardware store. This Saturday, February 18th, is the Ace Hardware Bag Sale. For one day only, save 20% on whatever you can fit in a bag. So come in this Saturday only, February 18th, and save big. Ace, the helpful place. Discount off regular price of in-stock merchandise. Additional exclusions may apply. See participating store for details.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware for.
Former Nesquik powder users are telling us why they switched to rich chocolate Ovaltine.
My girls don't like to drink white milk, and the only way I could get them to drink it was with chocolate milk. I'd seen on TV that Ovaltine has extra vitamins in it. Now I'm using it, and my girls love the taste. And they're drinking their milk, getting their calcium, and all the vitamins from Ovaltine. I stopped using Nesquik because it just doesn't have the vitamins that Ovaltine has.
Ovaltine. Try it for the nutrition. Keep buying it for the taste.
More Ovaltine, please!
They're a favorite to win the gold, but the U.S. men's hockey team had a shaky start in Torino. Here's ABC's Eric Kucherski.
Backed by thousands of relentlessly screaming fans, Team Latvia tied Team USA 3-3. The Americans were bigger and faster, but forward Craig Conroy says Latvia refused to quit.
We made some mistakes. It gave them some opportunities. They scored, and, we had some chances, in the third period, but we just couldn't find a way to win that game.
Conroy says the jet-lagged team that had only a day's practice got away from its game plan, but can win at any time. The Americans squandered a 2-0 advantage and looked to regroup against Kazakhstan. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, Torino.
The search is on for a prize-winning pooch. Vivi the Whippet got loose at New York's JFK Airport. The dog took part in this week's Westminster Dog Show. She's still a fugitive. The butterscotch pony, Let's Dance Barbie, and the Typhoon bubble-blowing machine. They're among the most popular picks at the International Toy Fair. Parents consider it a very early heads-up. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Time for a report of WGNU News. This update is brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. I'm Peyton Colston reporting.
In the news this morning, it looks like Praxair may be moving out of its current location. St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay says the city will support a zoning change of the Choteau property in order to allow the company to maximize the value of a sale. Nigel Muir, a spokesman for Praxair, says the company advised the city that it would drop an appeal to repair the site that was damaged in a massive explosion last summer if the rezone was approved. Muir says the company is looking at a couple of proposed sites, but there are certain criteria that must be met. In other news, a Shiloh, Illinois soldier is one of four soldiers killed in Afghanistan Tuesday when his Humvee hit a landmine and came under mortar fire. Staff Sergeant Edwin Dasashakon was a member of the GCS 7th Special Forces Group based out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Illinois Congressman Jerry Costello, whose son served with Dasashakon during the first Gulf War, says he was a dedicated soldier who, quote, died doing what he wanted to do, unquote. Funeral arrangements are pending. In Granite City, work will begin next week on dredging operations near the Chain of Rocks Canal. Nicole Dalrymple, a spokesperson for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, says issues were discovered with the levee during the flood of 1993, and this work will help counteract underseepage that occurs when water starts to penetrate the levee and will therefore protect the levee during any future floods. The work will continue through May. And in Jefferson City, State Senator Joan Bray is concerned about a bill that would decentralize the state's emissions testing program. Bray says she's worried that moving emissions testing to repair shops would lead to problems for consumers because some shops would choose not to do the testing. The bill would also put an end to the Rapid Screen Roadside Testing Program, which passed 187,000 vehicles last year. Senate Bill 583 is awaiting debate on the state Senate floor. And that's WGNU News, brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. New, the Illinois Lottery's Veterans Cash. 100% of proceeds supports health care services and disability programs for Illinois veterans. Play Veterans Cash today, because when you play, everybody wins. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Account Temps. Eastbound 40 at Chesterfield Parkway, there's a report of an accident. Northbound 270 from 44 to Marshall, there's an accident reported. Lee May Ferry at 255, there's an accident on the ramp to westbound 255. Southbound 270 between Doherty Ferry and Big Bend, look for an accident there. Right lane is blocked. Northbound 55 from Richardson to 270, no problems to report. Eastbound 70 from 370 to 94 looks good. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry to West Florissant, look for slow traffic as well. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and 270, no problems there. Westbound 270 from New Florissant all the way into 170, slow traffic in the right lane. Eastbound 70 at Forestell, look for slow traffic due to an earlier accident. Westbound 5570 from 4th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic there. Westbound 64 at 5570, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from 5570 on to Laclede's Landing, look for slight delays. There's an accident at Route K and Technology Drive. It's out in St. Charles County. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Account Temps. Call today for a free 2006 salary guide and find out the latest salary ranges for the accounting and finance profession. Now, taking a look at your WGNU weather for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Windy, areas of fog this morning, showers, rain, and thunderstorms likely this afternoon, a high around 60. This evening, windy, much colder, becoming partly cloudy late, then rain likely after and later on in the evening, becoming snow mixed in with it. No snow accumulations are expected. The low should be in the lower 20s. Friday, much colder, partly sunny in the morning. Mostly cloudy by the afternoon, a high in the lower 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy with a low around 15. And then on Saturday, mostly cloudy with a high around 20. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 49 degrees under cloudy conditions. Lambert Field is reporting 48. Do slow down out there. There's fog in low-lying areas. That's a look at this hour's news, traffic, and weather. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith. That's up next. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that. I remember saying that Congress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you listen?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, and we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome to Eye on the Lou. This is Liz Brown, and I'm here with Irene J. Smith. Irene, good morning.
Good morning, Liz, and listening audience.
How are you this morning?
Hey, pretty good.
All right. Well, this morning, I guess we're going to do something a little different here. I think that it is imperative that we... when we talk about the things that are going around in the city and we see some of the things happening, so much of the stuff that happens is connected to decisions that were made outside of the city of St. Louis.
Exactly.
So this morning, why don't we take a look at some of the things that are headed in our direction from the good folks in Jefferson City.
Oh, my. I guess one of the most important piece of legislation that is being debated now in Jefferson City is the change in the election laws that would require photo ID in order to vote.
And let's back up just a little bit here. Because it's a real short part to the bill. Why don't we read exactly what the bill says?
Well, a summary of the bill is this. This bill, which is House Bill 1573, would allow a person to register to vote to present a valid Missouri non-driver's license or passport. Of course, a valid Missouri driver's license will continue to be allowed, but birth certificates, tribal documents, or other forms of personal identification will no longer be accepted for the purpose of voter registration.
And that is a huge change, because how is it done now, Irene?
You bring in your birth certificate, tribal documents, utility bills, something indicating that you reside at a particular address, and you are then allowed to register to vote.
And who's introducing this bill?
This is Representative Robb.
Mm-hmm. And Republican, Democrat.
Republican.
And I think it's interesting that this bill is coming out right now, because if it is passed, it would take place when? It would be in effect when?
It will take effect the end of August, which would be August 28th. So it would take effect during the November election, which is going to be a very hotly contested Senate race in the state of Missouri.
And all eyes of the nation are going to be watching this, because of the all eyes of the nation are watching whether or not the Republicans are going to continue to maintain the majority in the House and the Senate and then in the presidency.
That's right.
So go ahead.
And I also need to point out that there's a companion bill in the Senate, Senate Bill 730, which basically you're going to have identification to vote. So once you've gotten your you've registered to vote under the pending legislation, there's a piece of legislation that's pending in the House. There's a companion piece of legislation in the Senate, Senate Bill 730, which would require you to provide ID with a picture, you know, state ID, driver's license, or whatever.
Or non-driver's license.
Or non-driver's license, which is normally referred to as state ID, in order to cast to receive a ballot. This is very problematic. The Women's League of Voters, the ACLU, various organizations have come out against it. And it's almost like it's, you know, we're reversing, you know. I know in the they talked to many state legislators, not many. Actually, my state rep called it is almost like a reverse to Jim Crowism, you know, like a poll tax or something.
I think poll tax is a better way of saying this, because the fact of the matter is that this will have an economic impact on economics will determine whether or not a person will be able to vote or not, and that's exactly what a poll tax is.
Right, and their response to that is, well, we're gonna permit that. We're gonna have the election board to take pictures of people.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's back up just a little bit, because there is a attached to every bill, there's a what they call a fiscal note. Tell us what a fiscal note is, and then talk about the fiscal note attached to this particular bill.
A fiscal note actually is an analysis of determining whether or not a piece of legislation will basically cost anything, and what that projected cost might be,
and where the money will come
and where the money will come from.
Mm-hmm.
The fiscal note here is interesting, because they sent out requests to the various election authorities throughout the state. And it's interesting, according to the information that we received, I guess, a couple of days ago, it did not appear that the City of St. Louis Board of Election Commissioner or St. Louis County responded to the request for determining whether or not it would cost anything.
Excuse me? They didn't respond.
No, they didn't respond.
The Kansas City Attorney's Office responded.
Yes.
The Kansas City Election Board responded.
Exactly.
But the City of St. Louis didn't respond?
According to the information that we received, this is as of Valentine's Day, they said they indicate who responded. They give you a list of who responded. And it says not responding. Was the St. Louis City, St. County Board of Election Commissions, and County Clerks of Boone, Callaway, Marion, Johnson, Warren, St. Charles, and many other counties did not even respond to a determination as to whether or not it would be any cost.
And this was dated February. We did the research on this on the 14th, but this was dated the February 9th.
Exactly.
Let's talk about this, because this isn't I want to take just a quick step to the side, if I may, Miss Irene.
Yes, ma'am.
City of St. Louis missed this date to respond to this. City of St. Louis kind of messed up on some was it Healthy Heart or some money that they didn't
Man, wow, we could spend a whole day talking about the dismantling of public health in the city of St. Louis. But one of the grants that the city of St. Louis received was a Healthy Heart Grant.
That's right.
And had been going, really a lot of seniors involved in it. Excuse me. City lost it, didn't file the necessary paperwork.
How much money are we talking about? We're talking about over $1 million.
Yes.
We're talking about over $1 million worth of a grant for Healthy Hearts for seniors. And Francis Slade, the city of St. Louis, lost it because they didn't bother to apply.
They didn't bother to file the report
okay. That
needed to be filed. And in addition to that, there's an economic aspect to this as well, because one of the components of the Healthy Heart program was that people would start to eat more fresh vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I was on the board and other aldermen encouraged the brother who was helping to run this to, when they issued vouchers, to make sure it would be issued for businesses in the community. And say, for an example, people are familiar with the fresh produce store that's over on Euclid and Martin Luther King in the First Ward, the store that's over at on Shreve, right off of Carter, where vouchers were supposed to be issued to people so people could go there and buy fresh vegetables.
And fruit.
Mm-hmm. And mainly fruit, actually, I believe. As a result of that, the money was lost. You know, people talk about the education. I know I talked to some seniors. I talked to Mother Grant, who goes up to Bishop Dwight Davis's program over on Emerson. And they were getting exercises. They were getting information. They were getting walking, all this stuff. And they had a really routine. And they were really getting into it, you know, weighing themselves, watching what they eat. So it was a very good program. And it's very problematic that the city lost that money.
And so the connect with what the voting issue here is that the city of St. Louis didn't respond to a request of what would be the economic impact on the city of St. Louis if the law was changed requiring every voter or everybody who wanted to register to vote have to have a picture ID, and they didn't respond to that request. So, but it's interesting, what did other communities say that the cost would be?
Differing amounts. I mean, it ranged from anywhere from, I think one was like $30,000. One was thought it would be more than that, depending on the county size, the number of polling places. Say, for example, the Kansas City Election Board did respond, and it has 200 polling places. It said that it would probably cost each assistant would receive maybe about $150. The cost estimate for an election would be $30,000 plus the cost of photo equipment. And, of course, they assumed that the state would reimburse them for this.
And what is interesting is that when the state put their fiscal note up, the fiscal impact on the state government, what was the number that the state came up with?
Okay, for 116 election authorities for equipment, supplies, training, and additional staff, they put the fiscal note at $1,402.
So talk to me about the problems of this, aside from, I mean, we talked about it being a poll tax. Let's talk about how that a senior who wanted to register to vote, what would have to happen now?
The senior would have to actually come in. You know, if they're on oxygen, they'd have to carry in their oxygen tank. If they're at a
nursing home,
they would have to come in
and take a picture.
And you know what was interesting is, I think it was in the Senate bill, when they talk about the election authority being able to take pictures, they said that they'll take a utility bill as proof. You know, you're registered, so they'll take that as proof that you're the person that you are to take the photo.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that wasn't good enough.
Right.
I thought that wasn't accurate
right.
enough.
Right.
So it's backwards.
It's backwards. And nationally, I think there are about 5 states, 2 of them, I believe, are in litigation
mm-hmm.
over this because of the impact. It is going to impact the poor. The elderly, and disproportionately the African American community.
And again, the they're also the, what is What does not appear in the fiscal note is the explanation for why this needs to be done. Because some people will say, well, you know, there's all kinds of fraud out there. Well, show me the fraud that justifies $1 million expenditure within the state of Missouri, and plus all of the cities that haven't weighed in on how much this is going to cost.
Exactly.
Them.
I mean, if the state wants to spend money and deal with, why don't they spend money on going through and purging voter registration list where people obviously, I mean, it took me the longest for someone who hadn't lived in my house in almost 20 years, you know, who lived there prior to me, to say, hey, this person doesn't live here. I put it on there. I've sent it back several times.
I'm still trying to do that, and I keep getting four or five different cards to do that. So, I mean, that would be money and time well spent. And the other piece of this is that, and what really is problematic, it reminds me of the decision made by Craig Williams yesterday to make all ninth graders go to year-round school. They didn't talk to any parents about that. They didn't talk to anybody about this. Where is the educational component of this? Because if we're going to do this, then there should be attached to the fiscal note the cost of informing the public that these are the new rule changes.
Well, this is what the sponsors say in response to that. They say, look, we're going to be using new voter machines anyway. We're going to be educating people about those new voter machines. So in the process of educating the people about using the new voter machines, then we can educate them about this as well.
Then it's nowhere in this fiscal note that was the plan.
Yeah, and I know that in the Senate, I believe Senator Maida Coleman.
There was a hearing on this.
There was a hearing on this, I believe.
Yesterday, wasn't it?
I believe it was scheduled for yesterday. So I'm anxious, and it's kind of problematic. I saw there was an article in the paper, I guess 2 days ago, on this issue. But on an issue as important as this, I really wish our elected officials would come forward to advise our community about legislation like this that is pending,
because
so that we can get on the phones and get letters out opposing this.
Absolutely, because the bottom line is that this is something that shouldn't be done, and let alone for an election that is so important as the upcoming one in November. This is not the time to try to enforce this. This is not the time to try to bring this about, because we know that there's not going to be money spent on reaching out and getting the people. People are going to be told on the day of the election, you can't vote because you don't have a photo ID.
Exactly, exactly.
And what's the plan for that, for the day of voting? You're going to have a photo machine there, and you're going to take their picture at the at their polling place, and then they're going to use a utility bill to prove that they're the person in the picture when you couldn't use your utility bill to prove that you were the person to vote. That's madness.
It really is. And then coupled with that, there's another bill pending by Ted Hoskins that will allow voter registration on the day of the election.
So it's a setup. It's almost like a setup to create chaos on election day and then backtrack and say, see, this is why we need to have photo IDs. This is why we have to do all this, because there's such chaos, intentionally created chaos, in order to come in and do what they want to do.
It's very unfortunate. And what it will do is it will suppress the vote.
That's
I mean, it will suppress the number of people who will participate. Who would participate?
And the other piece to this is Maida Coleman wants to be a citywide elected officer, right? She wants to have a citywide office, right?
That's correct.
Well, I think y'all need to get to Maida Coleman and find out if she made it to this hearing, and how she voted, and people. And these are the things that like you said, the elected officials need to be bringing home to their constituents. How many people know this? How many people know this in the city of St. Louis that this kind of thing is going on?
It's like, take for an example, in Tuesday's Post, you know, Valentine's Day, there's discussion about this proposal that's pending in the legislature. You know, it's a Republican proposal. You know, they quote one elected official from our community, and that's Yaphet Elamine.
And we're going to take a break, folks. This is, of course, Eye on the Lou. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Eastbound 40 at Chesterfield Parkway, there's an accident on the right shoulder. Northbound 270 from Marshall, all roadways are reopened after that accident, but it's still on the shoulder, and traffic jams back through Tesson Ferry at this hour. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes and 79, look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 from 367 all the way in West Florissant, look for slow traffic as well. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and 270, expect delays this hour. Westbound 270 from New Florissant to 170, look for slow traffic in the right lane. Eastbound 40 from 141 all the way into Mason, look for slow traffic there. Eastbound 40 between 270 and Brentwood, everything is on the move. Westbound 5570 from 64 onto the PSP, look for slow traffic there. Westbound 64 at Bow Avenue and the 5570 merge, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from 5570 all the way into Cleves Landing looks good. Northbound Illinois Route 3 from 8th Street onto the PSB, you can expect slow traffic. Eastbound 370 at St. Louis Mills, there's a report of a disabled vehicle, and that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. New, the Illinois Lottery's Veterans Cash, 100% of the proceeds support healthcare services and disability programs for Illinois veterans. Play Veterans Cash today, because when you play, everybody wins. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, windy, areas of fog this morning, showers, rain, and thunderstorms are likely this afternoon, high around 60. This evening, windy, much colder, becoming partly cloudy late. Rain likely early in the evening, then mixed with snow later. No snow accumulations are expected, but the low should be in the lower 20s. Friday, mostly colder. Partly sunny in the morning and early afternoon, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the lower 30s. Friday evening, however, mostly cloudy. The low will be around 15. Saturday, mostly cloudy once again with a high in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 55 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 56 under cloud cover. There is area low-lying fog, so use caution if you're rolling up into those areas. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call with Irene J. Smith. It's Eye on the Lou. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Listen, folks, the Eye on the Lou is sponsored by Hood's Good, one of our brand new sponsors for Eye on the Lou. What's Hood's Goods? Well, it's located at 12100 Bell Fountain. They're open from Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, Saturday to 10 a.m. to 8:30, Sunday, 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. What do? They carry clothing like Dickies for men and women, Vibes, men and women, Apple Bottoms, Echo Red, Girl Band, Fitted Hats, Shoes, Timberland, Undershirts, Underwear, Thermal Coats, shirts, tall tees, they have it all. Come on, $20 off. Let me put it this way, T-shirts, 5 for $20. Look, they're located at 12100, that's 12100 Bell Fountain, Hood's Goods. You need to check them out. One of the proud sponsors of Eye on the Lou.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested, and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues in the African American History Series. On Saturday, February 18th at 12 noon at the Missouri History Museum in Forest Park, explore the historical relationships between various racial and ethnic groups in St. Louis by taking part in the guided Missouri History Museum tour, St. Louis in Black and White. After the tour, celebrate the life of late civil rights pioneer Rosa Parks in the dramatic play Rosa Parks and the Montgomery Bus Boycott, performance at 2 p.m. Tickets are $5 per person for the general public and $3 per person for Missouri Historical Society members. Reservations are required. Call 361-9017. Or go to www.mohistory.org.
Are those wedding bells I'm hearing? You know what that means. No, not Valentine's Day. It's the St. Clair Bridal Fest Spring Review at St. Clair Square, February 18th and 19th. Whether you're planning an entire wedding or just looking for ideas for your wedding planner, the St. Clair Bridal Fest Spring Review is the place to be. Bridal Fest will have vendors and exhibitors from all areas of the bridal and party industry. See the latest fashions while you explore a variety of displays that are sure to inspire. Take a break in the center court and enjoy the music from Night Magic Entertainment. Don't forget to stop by the Bridal Registry, sign up for the mailing list, and pick up your Bridal Fest bingo card. Fill in the spaces and you could win one of thousands of dollars in prizes to be given away all weekend long. That's the St. Clair Bridal Fest, February 18th and 19th, hosted by St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. Sponsored by Pandy Cakes, Night Magic Entertainment, and Radio Free St. Louis AM 920 WGNU. Get more details at spcshows.com. This is a Specialized Promotional Concepts production.
We've found another good old boy network at work inside FEMA. And it's a major reason why the people of New Orleans had no chance to get any meaningful help after Hurricane Katrina. Former FEMA Director Joe Alabaugh and the man he selected as his replacement, Michael Brown, knew nothing about dealing with disasters. And associates described both of them as being ethically challenged. So how did they get their jobs? Another fascinating story you will only hear on The Wake Up Call with investigative journalist Russ Baker, coming up Thursday at 9 with Liz Brown. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Welcome back to Eye on the Lou. Irene J. Smith, we ain't done with this voting piece, are we? Because it's like voting bill mania up in Jefferson City.
It is, because we mentioned one of the Senate bills, but the one that was really reported in the paper was 1014, I believe it's sponsored by Senator Scott. And this bill also bars persons from being paid to go out to get people to register to vote, unless you're registered and recognized by the Secretary of State as a voter registration solicitor.
So, in other words, ward organizations couldn't hire people to go out and to go around the neighborhood and get people registered to vote. That would be, and what kind of a crime would that be? How would that, I mean, that's an incredible assault on the idea of commerce in the United States.
It is. It's saying that.
I mean, I don't even know who all. There's no registry for my elected official to show me what PACs he's part of, what organizations he gets money from. But you're going to tell citizens that they've got to let Jefferson City know if they're paying people to register people to vote. What's the thought behind that?
Immediately. Point to, it's fraud when you pay people. There are people who, there's a cost in organizing, okay?
Why is it,
and merely because someone is paid to register people to vote, the election board has a job to do after that.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
You're confused.
No, I'm not confused. I'm trying to make the analogy here. So the fact that we're paying George W. Bush to be the president means that we should expect fraud. I mean, if that's the analogy, that paying somebody to do a job means that they're going to engage in fraudulent acts,
what other justification is it? I mean, other than we want to know who's out there collecting signatures, okay, we want to make sure we keep up with.
Then have a form that they have to sign and attach it to the, and they already have that, don't they? I mean, you have to, and if that's the case, if you want to know who the people are, then require that whoever collects
turn in a form at the election board.
A notarized form saying I'm the one that collected these signatures.
Exactly. And the point is, we do have a local Secretary of State's office. The question is whether or not you're going to have to do it in Jefferson City or whether or not you'll be allowed to do it at the local office.
And if you have to, I learned this as a child, if you have to ask, sometimes the answer is no. So if people now have to ask to get permission to get paid to go out and collect votes, the answer could be no.
Right.
And what's going to be the criteria that determines that?
I don't know. I mean,
you have to register with the Secretary of State's office. Then the Secretary of State's office, and in addition to this, I believe the Secretary of State's office has come out against this as well. The other thing is, boy, you talking about voting mania. Rita Days, Aretta Day, has introduced legislation that would allow an advanced voting system for elections.
So all of this stuff coming down at the same time, madness.
If all of this passes, if we get the, you can register to vote on Election Day, which of course would increase voter participation. Mm-hmm. And if we get, you got to have your photo identification. And if we get advanced voting, all of this at the same
and
time.
And whatever Ted Hoskins' bill was.
That that's the registration on the day of the election. And you will vote. I guess you will be given a provisional vote before they check you out or whatever. But if you have all of these items, I don't know why you would have to vote provisionally.
And we have to take a little bit of a break here because we have to thank one of our sponsors and introduce people to one of our sponsors, Hood Goods. That's right. I'm telling you, if you want to get some really cool clothes, if you want to get some Apple Bottoms, if you want to get Echo Red, if you want to get Girl Bought, if you want to get fitted hats, shoes, Timberland t-shirts, women's coats, thermal shirts, tall tees, regular t-shirts, $5 for $20. You need to get on down to 12100 Bell Fountain. That's 12100 Bell Fountain. That is Hood Goods, one of the proud sponsors of Eye on the Lou. Check them out. This is where your baby wants you to shop. Get on over to Hood Goods at 12100 Bell Fountain. They're open Monday through Sunday. For more information on the times, give them a call at 438-8400. That's 438-8400. Hood Goods. Check them out. And these are just amazing things that they're trying to do in Jefferson City. Craziness.
Mm.
Craziness.
Ooh. Well, let's see. Why don't we provide, allow school districts to provide transportation for private school
That's
pupils.
Another bill that's up there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That we would pay for private kids to go to school, to ride the bus. Our babies in the city of St. Louis can't even, they're cutting the bus routes.
Now, they do say, now the parent has to reimburse the district for that proportionate share of the actual operating and capital expenses incurred in providing the transportation service.
So bureaucracy increased for finding out and keeping track of the parents paying for this, right? Okay, then. We have a couple more minutes. I want to, before we have to take our next break here, I want to talk quickly about this amazing bill that's been introduced up in Jefferson City.
Are you talking about the taxpayers, the joint resolution?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, man. This is House Joint Resolution 48.
Tabor.
Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. You know, we want to tie any increase in spending to the growth in population plus inflation measures like the Consumer Price Index.
Okay. In other words, what's going to happen is that that's the technical legal language to this. The fact of the matter is that Tabor came out of Colorado.
Exactly.
And it's an anacronym used for Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. They passed it in 1992, and it worked so well for them that a Republican governor said in the year 2005, you know what?
Hold up. We need to put a halt on this. We need a moratorium on this.
And because the Tabor was attached to the Constitution of Colorado, they couldn't just stop doing it. So they had to put it on hold for 5 years.
Right.
They had to put it on hold for 5 years. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but let me get to a quick caller here before we get to our break. Charles.
Yes, good morning, Liz and Irene.
Good morning.
I was calling. I had to walk into the kitchen, so I have to apologize for that. But I was calling about, she mentioned about you don't have to have a birth certificate anymore.
No, it's not that you don't have to have a birth certificate anymore. There is legislation pending up in Jefferson City that would say that a birth certificate is not the proper ID that you can use to register to vote. You have to have a photo ID.
Yeah, well, that's what I was getting to. What it sounds like to me is if you don't have to show a birth certificate and all you need is a driver's license or a state ID, it sounds as though to me this is illegal aliens who are not supposed to be in this country can vote for whomever they want.
Okay. Thanks for your call and observation.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a quick break, folks. This is Liz Brown. Eye on the Lou, Irene J. Smith. Let's take a break and get back to a couple of our callers. Get back to a little bit more on Tabor. And then, of course, you know what? You know what we have to do. We know what we have to do. Word on the street. Word on the street. Stay with us.
Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Alliance Financial Group. How do the rich get rich? Let Alliance Financial Group show you how. Call 381-8967.
This is your wake-up call Global News Update. Dateline Guatemala City. A series of gruesome vigilante killings are believed to have taken place in Guatemala. The bodies of 12 people have been found with indications of torture before their death outside of the capital city. Five men and two women were discovered in a ditch where a note was also left saying that they were members of a gang that had been extorting money from local residents. All of them were bound at their hands and feet. Some were shot to death and others had their throats cut or were strangled. The note said they belonged to a gang called the Maura 18, one of two large factions blamed for killings and robberies throughout Central America. And Dateline London. Reports have emerged from Iran that one of its nuclear processing plants has restarted several centrifuges that are necessary to produce weapons-grade uranium. The report goes on to say they're being fueled with uranium hexafluoride, which is an important ingredient to make a nuclear weapon. Last week, the International Atomic Energy Agency said it was going to refer the Iran matter to the UN Security Council. After that, Iran said it was going to stop cooperating with the IAEA. Restrictions are now said to have been put on IAEA inspectors' movements around the facilities at Natanz. Iran is said to have acquired those centrifuges from the underground nuclear network operated by a Dr. A.Q. Khan, who is considered to be the man behind the Pakistani nuclear bomb. Iran has insisted that the centrifuges were being used for research purposes to develop alternative energy sources. In a related story, the London Sunday Telegraph says the United States military has come up with plans to attack Iranian nuclear sites by air and with submarine-launched missiles to prevent any weapons development. The plans include new and improved bunker buster bombs and laser-guided bombs delivered from B-2 bombers based here in Missouri and refueled in flight. An anonymous Pentagon advisor says these plans are no joke, that they are just that, plans. Iran has already said if such attacks take place, it has its own long-range missiles, secret commando units, and terrorist allies around the world ready to retaliate. Britain is advising the U.S. not to attack Iran, saying it could lead to attacks throughout the Mideast and perhaps even inside the United States itself. This is your wake-up call Global News Update, brought to you this hour by Alliance Financial Group, 381-8967.
Would you like to earn $500 to $2,500 a month? Have you been turned down for a real estate loan because of bad or poor credit? Would you like to invest in real estate but you don't know how to get started? All you need is the right strategy. Let Alliance Financial Group show you how with a free financial presentation this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Airport Hilton Hotel. Seating is limited, so call 381-8967. 381-8967. Listen, folks, a new sponsor of Eye on the Lou, Hood Goods. I'm telling you, all of the great clothes, all of the fly clothes, all of the what your baby wants to wear. We're talking about Apple Bottom. We're talking about Echo Red, Girl Bod, fitted hat, shoes, Timberland. How about this? Tall tees, regular t-shirts, 5 for $20. They're located at 12100 Bell Fountain. That's 12100 Bell Fountain. And they're open Monday through Sunday. You need to give them a call for their hours at 438-8400. Come on, get on over to Hood Goods, where you're going to get all the fly clothes at the best prices. So take your babies over to Hood Goods and tell them that Irene and I told you to.
We've found another good old boy network at work inside FEMA. And it's a major reason why the people of New Orleans had no chance to get any meaningful help after Hurricane Katrina. Former FEMA director Joe Alabaugh and the man he selected as his replacement, Michael Brown, knew nothing about dealing with disasters. And associates described both of them as being ethically challenged. So how did they get their jobs? Another fascinating story you will only hear on The Wake Up Call with investigative journalist Russ Baker, coming up Thursday at 9 with Liz Brown.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else, where else, where else do you go for your washers, your dryers, your freezers, your stoves, your big-screen televisions, your itty-bitty tiny DVD players? You go to the Sears in your own neighborhood. That's where you go. It's a full-service Sears. You don't have to go to a mall. You don't have to drive outside of the city. Why would you? It's right here where you live. And it is the best customer service. Jerome Williams will make you feel like you in Hollywood when you go in there and try to buy something out of his Sears. So, get your shop on. Get on over to Sears at Union and Natural Bridge. And I'm Liz Brown. You tell him. You tell Jerome Williams when you get in there and get a great deal and wonderful treatment that I told you to.
The people, the issues affecting your life, right here, right now, on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back. Welcome back to I and the Lou. I'm Liz Brown. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. And we are, let me get to another caller or two, and then we got to get to the best part of the show. Let me get to this caller here. Aleem, good morning.
All right. Good morning, my sisters.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. About the voters situation, they still haven't addressed the voter fraud that took place back in 2000.
Fair enough.
Need to address that. They haven't addressed that, and I haven't heard anybody else, not even our black Congress people. It's just like they just went quiet over the whole thing.
And thanks for that, Aleem, because show you right. It's like, why don't we clean up the kitchen before we start talking about what's going on in somebody else's house?
Exactly.
And you know what? I think that... I'm feeling this. Let me get to one more caller here, because I definitely want to get to the favorite part of the show. You're on the Wake Up Call. I'm sorry, you're on Eye on the Lou. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz and Irene. This is State Representative Yasser Alameen. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm just going back to Jefferson City, and here you all are talking on the new election bill that was just passed out of the Senate committee last night.
Oh,
so it was passed out.
It came out of the Senate committee. They rolled it into a substitute with another bill, and they're on fast track to pass this piece of legislation.
Is that 1014, Yasser?
Right. They rolled 1014 into 730
okay.
and passed it all out last night. And they are trying to proceed to debate it on the Senate floor. So I think it's definitely a measure that our Senate Democrats need to stand up and filibuster and keep from becoming law.
And we know that when we were looking at the members of the committee, we know that
Senator Coleman
was on that committee. Do you know if she voted yesterday?
Right. Senator Coleman, as well as Senator Yvonne Wilson,
were the
two African-American Democrats, and they were in opposition to the bill. The problem was we had very few people come up to testify against that legislation. I think the NAACP has gone on record, not in support, but there were no none of our advocacy groups speaking up against that piece of legislation in committee. So I think it's an excellent opportunity. People need to get on it. The Republicans are trying to fast-track it. It has an emergency clause on it, so they want it to become law before the August elections.
Before the August
Before the August election.
Yes, as soon as it's passed, the governor can sign it, and it can become law immediately.
Then people really need to really get on this.
Okay. And they have a glitch in it, Liz and Irene, indicating to people that the state will pay for you your identification. What it says is that if you have a doctor's statement indicating that you're unable to drive, then the state will pay for you to have a non-driver's identification.
But if you don't have a doctor's statement, then you got to pay.
That's right. That's exactly
Ain't that
correct.
Some stuff? Ain't that some stuff?
That's exactly correct. So they are trying to
eliminate
160,000 people in the state that do not have the current identification in the way that we have it from voting, and it's just a backdoor way to try to keep those people that they cut off of Medicaid from engaging in the process.
Isn't that something?
Mm,
Thank you so much.
I'm glad you all are on it. Please continue to keep the community active in it. We need to let them know that the Senate, we need to send a message to the senators that they need to filibuster and stand against this issue. They filibustered PLA 2 days ago, so we need to do the same thing for our citizens.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right. It's time. Come on now.
The word on the street.
The word on the street.
He says, she says.
Come on now.
The word on the street. Girl, did you hear about
the word on the street?
Man, did you know? The word on the street.
All right now. I had no idea, Irene Jason. Whoa. Word on the street.
You know what, Liz? It seems that the words on the street are flowing from the words on the street that we put out last week. You know, I received calls like I was doing an investigation on building inspectors giving me name. Is so-and-so on the list? Yeah, I'm not going to say the person's name. And so there seems to definitely be an investigation that's videotaping building inspectors who may not be doing a full day's work for a full day's pay.
Well, how about this one? Audio tapes in the recent car chase that killed Reverend Cole may indicate that there was no shooting by the suspect. Ooh. And that's why Moqua has come out so intent about not having an independent investigation. Ain't that something?
And then take that, Liz, and compare it with the Maplewood chief.
Mm-hmm.
How he said, I cannot make a statement on this until there has been a complete investigation. Whereas within minutes, Muckle had reached his conclusion that the chase was justified under the existing policy because a police officer a gun was pointed at him and that had been one shot.
Word on the street, Slay didn't expect the board bill 69 to make it out of committee. He was shocked. He was stunned. He looked like a deer in the headlights. Now he's scrambling to find white alder people to tack on amendments that will make the Civilian Review Board ineffective. And check this out. The first two aldermen that were approached by the mayor to do this turned him down flat. They said no.
No.
They said no.
It's my understanding that every individual that the mayor has approached about tacking on amendments has said,
So word on the street is that Francis ain't getting no love. Francis ain't getting no love from trying to kill this bill. Listen, folks, if you have some word on the street that you want to offer up, if you have some word on the street, come on. Email us at wordonthestreet@lizbrown.com. That's wordonthestreet@lizbrown.com. Irene J. Smith, we got some more to talk about. I guess we're going to have to get it done next week.
Especially the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights.
Okay, we'll continue that conversation next week. Until then, Irene J. Smith, we'll do it next week.
All right, Liz Brown.
All right, take care. Listen, folks, I'll be back in the next hour. Don't want to miss this Katrina update. Hang on.
You were born with
very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
others say that progress is being made. You take a knife and knife back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches. There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound at the below, that the low knee.
It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from the ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff is heading to Capitol Hill again today. This time he'll talk to a House committee about his budget. Yesterday he got a grilling from a Senate panel over the government's slow response to Hurricane Katrina.
Senators raked Michael Chertoff over the coals for not responding adequately to plenty of advance warning that Hurricane Katrina would break the levees of New Orleans. And on the day that Katrina came ashore, according to Democrat Carl Levin, there was plenty of notice. Notice that Chertoff seems to have missed.
ABC's Vic Ratner in Washington. Vice President Cheney is staying out of the spotlight for the most part today. Yesterday, he finally talked about his hunting accident. He told Fox News that he's to blame for shooting his friend, Harry Whittington, and he said asking Catherine Armstrong to release information was his decision.
Catherine suggested, and I agreed, that she would go make the announcement, that is, that she put the story out, and I thought that made good sense.
Cheney also talked about his role in leaked White House documents. More from ABC's Ann Compton at the White House.
Vice President Cheney was asked on Fox News Special Report with Brit Hume if he had ever allowed White House aides to disclose classified information.
I certainly advocated declassification and participated in declassification decisions.
Have you ever done it unilaterally?
I don't want to get into that.
Former top aide Scooter Libby faces trial in the CIA leak case, arguing Cheney authorized some information. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
The Senate takes up a bill today that would renew the Patriot Act. It adds some provisions to civil liberties. Wisconsin Democrat Russell Feingold's trying to add language that would curb government power. There are some new pictures from Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison like the previous that they're getting a lot of attention.
Most Iraqis see this as being a fresh incident, and for them, in the past 2 weeks, they feel that the Danes have insulted their prophet, British soldiers have abused their civilians, and now Americans have tortured and humiliated their prisoners.
ABC News.
My wife works hard. The kids are 10, 6, and 3. Our life together gets a little crazy. So I called Applebee's like I've done before. They brought our favorite foods out to my car door.
With Applebee's Carside to Go, you call it in, we bring it out.
Now my wife runs to meet me just as fast as she can. Cause there's something women like about a pickup man.
Applebee's Carside to Go. It's not fast food, it's Applebee's Food Fast at participating locations.
Top three reasons I'm celebrating President's Day with a paintbrush. Number three, the votes are in, and it's unanimous. We're painting the den. Number two, it's time to trade in colonial white for cherry tree red. And number one, I'm saving $20.
Through February 20th, get $20 off 5-gallon buckets of Behr interior and exterior paint, waterproofers, and stains. And $5 off 1-gallon cans, only at the Home Depot. You can do it, we can help. Valid by manufacturer mail-in rebate in U.S. only. See store for details.
It is an emotional issue. No two ways you look at it. Is there any way that you can make the death penalty less painful? Well, California thinks it's come up with a solution. There will be an anesthesiologist at the state's next execution, which is set for Tuesday. There was no winner in last night's Powerball drawing. That means Saturday's jackpot will be worth at least $365 million. The search continues for an award-winning show dog named... She's a whippet in the New York City, who was in New York City, I should say, to compete in this week's Westminster Dog Show. But she got loose at JFK Airport as she was about to board a plane to L.A.
The worst part is that she's out here and she's scared and cold, and we hope she's not hurt.
He's in the search party. Vivi, by the way, is not your average dog. She's worth about $150,000. It was a shaky start to competition for the U.S. men's hockey team in Torino. They tied Latvia 3-3. Next up, Kazakhstan. I'm Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Here's a report of WGNU News. This update is brought to you by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. In the news this morning, the St. Louis Public Schools are in for a major overhaul. Yesterday, Superintendent Dr. Craig Williams announced the Building Toward 2011 plan, which includes an extended school year for 7th and 8th grades and year-round 9th grade academies and 9th grade centers.
73% of all of my 9th graders have not earned the credits that they need to go on to 10th grade. that 73% today are not prepared credit-wise to go to the 10th grade. Now, if that's not compelling enough information and data to say to us that we need to go in and not wait.
The five-year strategic plan also calls for mandatory school uniforms and expanded programs for gifted and talented students. The reforms are scheduled to go into effect for the 2006-2007 school year. In Jefferson City, Senator Joan Bray is concerned about proposed legislation that would decentralize the state's emissions testing program. Bray says her biggest issue with Senate Bill 583 is the impact it would have on the environment.
We don't know if this program is going to work and maintain the air as clean as it is. Connecticut did this. The EPA has slapped them on the wrist and sent it back to be changed because they didn't meet the air standards, which they check up after 18 months. And they didn't meet the air standards. So is this going to happen in Missouri?
This bill would also remove the rapid screen testing of vehicles, which pass vehicles from the roadway through tests. Last year, 187,000 vehicles passed the emissions test through that process. Senate Bill 583 is awaiting debate on the Senate floor. And the first African-American actress to ever win an Academy Award is being honored with a postage stamp. The U.S. Postal Service yesterday unveiled the new Hattie McDaniel stamp during a ceremony at Harris Stowe State University. Mike Stansel, a spokesperson for the Postal Service, says in addition to being a great actress, McDaniel was an activist against racism.
She is best known for her Oscar-winning role as Mammy in the award-winning 1939 film Gone with the Wind. Most people know her as playing parts as maids and what some would call those stereotypical roles, but back then it was where the work was.
McDaniel is the 29th African-American to be honored in the U.S. Postal Service's long-running Black Heritage Commemorative Stamp Series. That's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle. Through February, purchase 4 tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive 3 complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your local RE/MAX office. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry. This disabled vehicle left lane is blocked and traffic is backing up at 55 and then slow again through 44. Southbound 270 between Cage and Olive. Look for an accident that's been cleared to the shoulder. However, traffic slows all the way back to Highway 70. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes to 79. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 at 367 and West Florissant. Look for slow traffic there as well. Eastbound 44 between 141 and 270. Expect delays. Westbound 270 from New Florissant all the way into 170. Slow traffic in the right lane. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason Road. Look for slow traffic there as well. Westbound 40 in Hampton, there's a medical emergency. A person is down and traffic is jamming from Hampton all the way back to Hanley. Westbound 5570 at 64 in the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 64 at Ball Avenue all the way to the 5570 split. Looks extremely slow this hour. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the 5570 split to Laclede's Landing. No problems report. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the PSB. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound Gravelway at 270. There's an accident on the right shoulder. Expect delays. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your local RE/MAX office. Heading home to your apartment, heading home to your new house. Earn credit to rent for the rent that you pay. Use your credits to own your home tomorrow. Go to RE/MAXHeadingHome.com. Turn renters into owners. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, windy, fog early this morning, rain showers and thunderstorms are possible by this afternoon with a high around 60. This evening, look forward to windy, much colder, becoming partly cloudy late, rain likely early in the evening, then mixed with snow later. No snow accumulations are expected. The low should be in the lower 20s. Friday, mostly colder, partly sunny in the morning, then in the afternoon, becoming mostly cloudy with a high in the lower 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy with a low around 15, and Saturday, mostly cloudy with a high only in the upper 20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU under overcast conditions, we have 55 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 57. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. We'll take another look at your news or your traffic and your weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back. This hour is, of course, because it's Thursday and it's 8 o'clock, it's time for Justice for Reggie. And my guest this morning is, as always, Jamala Rogers, the campaign coordinator for the Justice for Reggie campaign. Good morning, Jamala.
Good morning, Liz. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Pretty good.
Very good. Well, let's start at the beginning where we always start. Why are we here talking about Justice for Reggie?
We are here to save the life of a young man that many believe is innocent, and it dates back to 1991 at the Chain of Rocks Bridge when a group of young men encountered two sisters and their cousin, and this is Julie and Robin Carey. And before the night was over, those two sisters were in the Mississippi River. Initially, Tom Cummins, the cousin of the two girls, admitted to being a part of them falling off the bridge. Initially, he said one fell off and then the other sister jumped in to save her. But when a flashlight was found on the bridge belonging to one of the four young men, the guilt shifted from Tom Cummins to the four young men. And all of them were teenagers except for one, and that was Marlon Gray. And the kinds of trials that the three black guys got are pretty abominable, and we've been talking about that over the last several weeks in terms of, you know, the perfect storm for all the wrong things to happen in a trial. and in a conviction, and ultimately it led to the execution of Marlon Gray last October. And so we are building steam around Reggie Clemens' case, but at the same time really raising the level of consciousness and awareness about the issues involving the death penalty as we talk about Reggie's case, and also about the criminal justice system in general. And the hope is that at the end of the process that we help to bring a moratorium to Missouri to look at the death penalty and all its flaws, but also that we save Reggie Clemens' life and perhaps some other folks who are on death row unjustly, and ultimately try to bring about some awareness about our confrontation and our interaction with the criminal justice system. So, you know, one of the things that I can't help but think about, Liz, is the crash that happened that led to the death of Reverend Cole, and out of that is going to come probably a death penalty for, you know, the young men involved. And we still don't know the circumstances around that, and, you know, we're talking about, you know, the police have said something about a gun, and there's some questions about that.
And Jamal, if we can just can back up just a little bit, because you're right. I suspect very, very strongly that there will be an effort to pursue the a death penalty charge against the young man that was driving the car. But this, because the death penalty is, and particularly Reginald's case, really exposes all of the flaws within the criminal justice system. I really can't, kind of like the Ten Commandments are ten perfect rules. Like, there is no sin that the Ten Commandments don't take in. I feel like this case of Reggie's is the same type of perfect thing, that there's no flaw in the criminal justice system that didn't take place in Reggie's case. And so, because it's all about the criminal justice system, this case where the Reverend was killed is also about Reggie's case, because when we talk about police misconduct, Reggie's case had police misconduct
Absolutely.
In it. And in this particular case, and I don't think that this is something that has been discussed enough, the police in this case are saying, Joe Mokwa is saying in this particular case that, you know what, he had a gun, therefore my boys put their pedal to the metal and they pursued him. But Jamala, wasn't there a law that was passed that said, I don't even need to have a permit to have a gun in my car? I'm allowed to carry a gun in my car. So if a cop sees a gun in my car, he's not allowed to put the pedal to the metal because that's legal. That is not probable cause for a police officer to start to chase somebody and to chase somebody until somebody is dead. That's not an excuse.
That's not an excuse. But the other part of it, which had me very concerned when that bill passed, is that we were going to be marked in our community.
See?
Because there's already a heightened sense where we don't know if they have a gun because now the law has been passed. But in this case, and I've heard from several police officers who heard the initial radio, that there was no report of gunshots or a gun initially. That seemed to have come after the crash, and there needed to be some justification for why these folks were pursuing. And it's very interesting, in the chase in Maplewood that resulted in the beating, Joe Mokwa immediately said that wouldn't have happened in St. Louis. I'm thinking it has happened, and now we see this happening. And the other part of this,
Joe Mokwa said that a beating like that wouldn't happen.
Well, the chase, because the pursuit policy in Maplewood is similar to that in St. Louis, in that if you don't have probable cause and if the safety of the community is greater than you chasing this person, particularly if a crime has not been committed or a felony has not been committed or your life has not been threatened, then there's no need to pursue. But what has happened in St. Louis is that they will chase and then say, we weren't chasing, we were just following
very closely, very
and
fast.
Yeah. So, you know, no matter what the policy is, these folks are still intent on chasing people down
until people die.
And folks, also, this is what I also heard from a number of officers, is that there were other property and other people that were involved in that who haven't even been, you know, in the media eye. Because
what do you mean other property, other people?
Well, there was another couple that was whose car was involved, and that car was flipped over.
Jesus.
Flipped over, and because they were not seriously injured, and I think they even may have refused.
They were in the car when they when the car was flipped over.
They were in the car when the car flipped over. So we don't even know the full extent in terms of who was all involved, what property was damaged in this police chase. We've only been told about Reverend Cole. So, I think it's serious, and I know that I've heard people call in on your show about, these folks going through our community, causing the problems. But I think when we look at why people are being chased, and when we look at how the policy of chases are implemented, then you have to say that something is definitely flawed. Because do you ever hear any of these chases in downtown St. Louis?
No, you don't.
Or on the Hill?
No, you don't.
So I think people need to really step back a minute and say, okay, why is it important that police chase down, beat down people in our community when that's not the police work that's being done in places where it's predominantly white?
Why is there a hard defense? And sometimes, regrettably, we hear defense coming from people that live in the community that you can beat down people. But mostly the defense is come of the, what the police are doing is coming from people who don't even live in the community. And that goes back to, again, the racism that existed that occurred in Reggie's case, that there is an understanding. Why do you think the prosecutor wanted to pursue the black kids in Reggie's case as opposed to the white guy who confessed and his story of what happened after his confession was completely contradicted by the physical facts?
Right.
So why did the prosecutor Nels Moss want it? Because of race, because he knew that in the city of St. Louis, just like right now with these police chases, that it is understood that you can go after black people and you can accuse black people of things, and this society, this city will accept that without question, hesitation, or pause.
And I think it's really sad, and I think what's most troubling is for African Americans who not even talking about the ones who say, they shouldn't have, these young people shouldn't be driving cars or getting chased. I'm talking about the people who say that at the end of the day, if you have a situation like Maplewood, that, they know that the police are going to do that, they deserve what they got, as if that's acceptable behavior on the part of police officers and something that we as a community should be accepting. And to me, that's the really, really sad part about it, that kind of mentality that it's almost like in slavery when, you ran and you knew you were going to get a whooping by the master. And then everybody, most people would say, well, yeah, old Joe shouldn't have ran because he knew if he got caught, he was going to get a beating.
But see, the fact of the matter is more people ran then and took it and decided to do it than what's happening right now.
That's true.
Okay, so,
that's true.
So I mean, the fact of the matter is that people, it is wrong for the police to engage in criminal behavior. It is worse for a police officer to engage in criminal behavior. It is absolutely worse, because if you have a society where the law is corrupt, then you have no society at all.
And Liz, that's a point that I think we have to make over and over again, because people take the path of least resistance and point to the young people who are, quote, causing all of this turmoil in our community. But there's a higher standard for the police officers in that they are, in fact, enforcers of the law, and they are paid by us to serve and protect.
That's right.
So it's a different bar that's been set for them than some, as one police officer told me, a knucklehead who the police knew. Mm-hmm. This guy that was driving the car that was killed, police knew who he was. They knew him by name. They know where he lives. So there was really no need to pursue.
And again, because a cop sees a gun in your car, that's not evidence of a crime, because we have conceal and carry in the city of St. Louis. So you can't tell me that I saw a gun, therefore I have to chase. That's not a felony. It is not a crime. You don't even have to have a permit to have a gun in your car, so you can't chase nobody because you see them with a gun in their car.
And so far, the facts don't even bear out that there was a gun in the car.
And more importantly, they've lied to do that, but then because you're lying, your lie it don't work either. Okay, even if people buy your lie, you can't chase because you saw a gun.
Right. And if you saw a gun in a white person, person's car, would you have pursued them in the same way?
Of course,
and
I
would say no. And I would say absolutely not.
And you would not only say no, but Jamala, you would also be supported by the evidence out there, because if crimes happen all over the city of St. Louis, all over the city of St. Louis, and people carry guns all over the city of St. Louis, people don't get to North St. Louis border and say, okay, now I'm going to be packing. They pack in the South St. Louis. They pack in North St. Louis. They pack in Ferguson. They pack in Florissant. They pack everywhere in the state because the law says that you can pack. The facts bear you out that you don't see, there's not a willingness, there's not an eagerness, there's an understanding with the police department that I can't chase somebody mm-hmm, down a residential mm-hmm. neighborhood because I may be killing my cousin, my mama's friend, or somebody I know.
And that's exactly what I heard from a number of officers who said, why chase for a traffic ticket? Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll catch up with the guy sooner or later because they live in the community. And that thing was, I'm not going to jeopardize my mother, my grandmother, because when you're doing a chase, you don't know who's going to be impacted.
There you go.
And people talk very fondly of Reverend Cole and his wife, and my heart really grieves for them, but it's a situation that was totally avoidable and unnecessary.
Let me get to a couple of callers here. Janice, you have a comment?
Hi. I have 2 points. Number one, I've turned my husband on to your show, so he's listening this morning. I really wanted to hear about that Reggie incident because he works with the guy's cousin, with the girl's cousin, who won't discuss it, and my husband is just so sure that Reggie is guilty. Point number two, I'm listening to what you're saying now about the police chase, and I want to know what department those police worked out of. Did they work in the traffic division? Were they in drugs? How do they just show up and start chasing this car, and they know this is somebody known to them? They didn't have the camera in the car. I thought they were going to be putting more cameras in the police cars so we can see what was happening. I heard there was erratic driving. I want to see this erratic driving, the reason that they were chasing the guys, okay?
All right, Janice, thank you so much for your question.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, and thanks for turning your husband on. All right.
Sure.
All right.
A couple of responses, one to the fact that we don't know what division these folks were out of, but we should demand the facts. We should demand to hear the audio tape from the initial call from the police officers. And here's another thing that people need to be reminding of, and that is that police officers, before they go into a chase, have to get approval mm-hmm. from a sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm saying that because oftentimes police will say, we have to make quick decisions, a split minute. You are having to slow down to call a sergeant to ask for permission. Your thinking is supposed to be in gear then. So you don't have to make a quick decision. You could say, okay, let him go. We know that's Joe Blow. We know where he lives. He'll be over his girlfriend's house or whatever.
And
you know the pattern of these folks.
And also, a sergeant is supposed to be cool-headed. He's not caught up in the moment. He's going to evaluate, where are you? No, we're not going to let you drive out. He did what? No, we're not going to do that. And this brings us back to Jamala, this brings us back to the issue of the all-white police class, because the reason why that is so significant and the reason why that is so problematic and harmful to the city in its entirety is because if there is an understanding, a racist understanding or a racial understanding that you can do certain things in the black community that you can't do in a white community, if we begin to have a police department that gets whiter and whiter and whiter, invariably, we're going to have a white beat cop calling a white sergeant, and with the residency thing as well, who doesn't live in the neighborhood, what is his answer going to be when somebody calls and says, I want to chase? It's going to be, get it on.
Get it on. And the other thing that seems to be increasing is the African-American police officers who are engaged in this kind of negative, destructive behavior. And because you have a police culture that says, this is the way you deal with these people, you then start to internalize that and feel like unless you do what the other boys are doing in blue, then somehow you're not going to be a part of the game.
And also there's a selection process, too. There's a culling process, too. There's a nurturing process, too, that a lot of police officers and some black police officers are picked because they have that same mentality. They're promoted because they have that same mentality. They're nurtured and made to feel like they're part of the old boys club when they ain't,
mm-hmm.
Because they have that I hate black people too mm-hmm. mentality.
Yeah, I'll put my kicks in.
Yeah.
I'll get my blows in. And this happened in Bell Ridge. And again, these are incidents that happened post the Maplewood. And I always tell people, whenever you have an incident like this or you have a police that gets, you know, hurt, injured, killed, then there's a backlash in the black community that most people don't get a chance to see.
Mm-hmm.
They will
That's
drive
right.
down on you
That's right.
and they will do some nasty things to you. And they'll say, sometimes they'll even say, this is for
yes,
that
will.
Officer.
Yes, they
and
will.
So in Bell Ridge, we got a number of calls of people who witnessed a beatdown in Bell Ridge. And what has happened, these police officers are beginning to change their mode of operandi because of what had happened in Maplewood. So in Bell Ridge, what they did is they had the police car surround in on the guy to beat him so that nobody
right,
could
nobody
actually
could see
it. But people saw the batons coming down, so they knew they weren't hitting
the sidewalk.
Mm. So, but see, that's what I'm saying. If you really are serious about your job and you say, well, we're not doing anything wrong, why do you need to hide?
There you go. And we have to take a break. I'm talking to Jamala Rogers. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. I see your calls on the line. We'll get to some of your calls when we get back. And we also will get back to, again, the connection of this to Reginald Clemens' case because it's all connected. We'll be back. We're taking a break. Stay with us.
Morning, St. Louis, 32 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by heatupstlouis.org. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79, look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 between 367 and West Florissant, look for slow traffic as well. Northbound 270 at Gravois and 44, slow. Eastbound 44 between Chrysler and Merrimack, look for that traffic to be easing this hour. Westbound 270 from New Florissant to 170, look for slow traffic in the right lane. Eastbound 40 from Woodsville all the way into Mason Road is slow. Eastbound 40 between Ballas and Lindbergh, look for traffic to be easing this hour. Westbound 40 at Hampton, look for a medical emergency. The person is down, traffic jamming from Hampton all the way back to Hanley. Southbound 270 at 70 and Page, look for that traffic to be easing. Westbound 5570 from 4th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic. Westbound 64 at the 5570 merge, look for that congestion to be cleared. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the 5570 mark all the way into Laclede's Landing looks good. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the approaches of the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect no problems there. Eastbound 30 at Marr, look for an accident has been cleared and traffic is returning back to normal. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by HeatUpSt.Louis.org. Rise and shine for Heat Up St. Louis and get a free sausage and egg biscuit sandwich for a buck donation at Hardee's on Friday, February 17th. Your extra change will help also keep the needy warm on those cold winter days. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, windy, areas of fog this morning. Showers, rain, and thunderstorms are likely this afternoon, a high around 60 this evening. Much colder, windy, becoming partly cloudy late. Rain early in the evening, then mixed with snow later. Little or no snow accumulation is expected. However, the lows will only be in the lower 20s. For Friday, much colder, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy by the afternoon, high in the lower 30s. For Friday evening, mostly cloudy with a low around 15. Then on Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 55 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 57. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, I'm Brian Kay, sales manager at WGNU Radio. Right now, you're hearing my voice. What you could be hearing is yours, telling people about your business. Call me during regular business hours at 314-454-6660 and let me show you how effective and affordable radio ads can be on WGNU and how they can bring new customers to you. Once again, that's Brian Kay at 314-454-6660. We can replace this ad with yours.
Get in the zone with AutoZone. When it's time for a brake job, AutoZone is your brake headquarters with everything you need to do the job right, including helpful advice and great prices. Replacing your brakes is easy, and AutoZone has a full line of brakes to fit practically any car and any budget, including Duralast brakes. Brakes that are built to last and backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Don't risk your safety with worn out brakes. Change your brakes and get in the zone. AutoZone.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested, and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues in the African American History Series. On Saturday, February 18th at 12 noon at the Missouri History Museum in Forest Park, explore the historical relationships between various racial and ethnic groups in St. Louis by taking part in the guided Missouri History Museum tour, St. Louis in Black and White. After the tour, celebrate the life of late civil rights pioneer Rosa Parks in the dramatic play Rosa Parks and the Montgomery Bus Boycott, performance at 2 p.m. Tickets are $5 per person for the general public and $3 per person for Missouri Historical Society members. Reservations are required. Call 361-9017 or go to www.mohistory.org.
We've found another good old boy network at work inside FEMA. And it's a major reason why the people of New Orleans had no chance to get any meaningful help after Hurricane Katrina. Former FEMA Director Joe Alabaugh and the man he selected as his replacement, Michael Brown, knew nothing about dealing with disasters. And associates described both of them as being ethically challenged. So how did they get their jobs? Another fascinating story you will only hear on The Wake Up Call with investigative journalist Russ Baker, coming up Thursday at 9 with Liz Brown.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Extent that it, and I think that all that's for, extent that it blocks the promotions that were approved, must be refused.
Judge Burnside also granted a motion that allowed 7 of the 9 promoted deputies to intervene in the case. The judge will schedule a hearing in March on a motion to dismiss Booker's appeal. Raleigh County contractor accused of setting fire to a house he was hired to build has waived his right to a preliminary hearing. Kenneth Sizemore Jr. of Shady Spring is charged with first-degree arson and conspiracy to commit a felony for setting a fire at the house at Cranberry Point Way on November 14th. Sizemore was a contractor who was working to build the house for Carrie and Donnie Lively. He was arrested following an investigation by Beckley Police, the Beckley Fire Department, and the State Fire Marshal's Office. Charges against two other suspects are pending. One is currently incarcerated in Illinois. Sizemore is being held at the Southern Regional Jail in lieu of $30,000 bond. His case is being forwarded to the May session of the grand jury. If convicted, Sizemore faces up to 25 years in prison plus fines. Two workers at a Summers County store watched in horror yesterday as one of their customers drove his compact car around a train gate and was struck and killed by an Amtrak train. Christy Furrow, a Richmond store in Sandstone, says 89-year-old Lawrence Burdett Sr. of Meadow Creek had just dropped by the store to get a paper from the box out in front, as he did every day.
I just seen the train coming, and he was blowing his whistle, and the man went on across the tracks. As the, you know, as the gates was down and everything, and he went on.
The Sheriff's Department says Burdett waited until a CSX train passed and then crossed the tracks and was hit by the Amtrak train. Burdette's car was dragged about a half a mile. None of the 77 passengers aboard was injured. The train is Amtrak number 50, called the Cardinal, and runs from Chicago to New York City. A Pennsylvania man has been hospitalized after being hit by a vehicle near downtown Beckley. 77-year-old John Stang of Union City, Pennsylvania, was taken to Raleigh General Hospital. Around 4:18 p.m., a car was making a right turn at the light from Prince Street onto Robert C. Byrd Drive. Police say Stang walked onto Byrd Drive in front of the car, carrying a small dolly with some of his belongings on it. Police say the woman tried to avoid the collision by slamming on her brakes. Police believe the driver did nothing improper. Stang's condition has not been released. And a coal truck driver remains hospitalized after his vehicle overturned in Wyoming County. Brian Dorsey of Somersville was taken to Raleigh General Hospital Tuesday afternoon after he reportedly lost control of the coal truck and had overturned to West Virginia 97 near Maven in Wyoming County. Dorsey's condition has not been released. The truck is owned by D&P Trucking of Drennan. No charges have been filed, but the incident remains under investigation by the Wyoming County Sheriff's Department. Otherwise, the wind advisory is in effect from 10 o'clock this evening to 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Today will be partly cloudy and unseasonably warm with a high of 63. Tonight, partly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers, breezy with wind gusts up to 45 miles per hour possible, and a low near 42. For Friday, rain and snow flurries likely, much colder with a high of 43 degrees. That's a look at news. I'm Ward Ellison for News Talk 620, what you need to know.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. News Talk 620, WWNR.
And welcome back. 40 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock on this Thursday. We thank Warren Ellison for getting us caught up with all the local news and the weather. Currently it is 54 degrees with sunshine outside of our studios here in beautiful uptown Beckley. 252-6200 is the local phone number. Outside the local area, we are toll free. 1-800-620-9967 or by email wwnr@netphase.net. Caller, you're live on the air. Who am I talking with?
This is old Dying Bob.
Bob, Dying Bob.
Yeah, I'm dying. I'm laying over here dying.
Oh, mercy.
I can't, my right leg went out. I can't stand up on it no more than a minute, minute and a half. And I just almost pass out with such terrible pain. I've been in the emergency room a couple of times. They don't know what it is. Have no idea. So I go back today, and we're going to run a batteries of tests.
Some cases, Vera and her husband had to come up with witnesses and come up with questions for the attorneys. And, I mean, it was just totally ridiculous. And they also had to hire an investigator to do some of the, find some of the witnesses.
And even if, okay, because there are some people out there that say, so what? Okay, he had an incompetent attorney. He still did it. So what? Well, what do you have to say to show that something else happened on this bridge? Let's go back to the cousin, because the cousin's story is, to me, is the proof positive of something else happened at that bridge. The cousin of the girls confessed. He said that what did he say?
He said, basically, I approached one of them, and the, you know, people need to see the bridge, but the bridge has big railings on it, and, you know, young people go sit on it, they climb on it, they were doing all kinds of things, writing graffiti. And so one of the sisters was sitting on the railing, and as Tom approached her, allegedly a sexual advance, she leaned back and fell, and then the other sister immediately jumped in to save her. Now, Tom Cummins, it's not clear what happened to him at that point. He claims in some statements that he temporarily blacked out. But somehow he ends up on the road flagging down a truck driver and saying that somebody pushed him in the water. Well, that was a 80 to 90 foot drop in freezing water. He wouldn't have been able to survive the fall, let alone the hypothermia of swimming across currents to get to.
And let's just say that the hands of the angels were all around him. They cradled him all the way down in his 80-foot drop. They cradled him all through the river. They got him. The angels got him to the bridge. The angels couldn't have made his clothes dry. Okay,
yeah.
Because the bottom line is mm-hmm. that if you accept that he fell and he survived, then why were all of his clothes dry and his hair was still neatly combed and there wasn't any debris from the river on him?
There was no debris. He was wet from the waist down. And so if you plunge into that Mississippi, you're going down deep and then come back up.
Physics requires that.
And this is one thing that I really want to say about people who say, well, I don't really... what I'm telling people today about this case and what I've said in the past about this case is what is in the testimony or in the police records. This is not Jamala just saying, oh, I want Reggie to win so bad that I'm just going to go off emotion. I just believe everything this brother says. These are backed up by facts that are part of court records and that have been part of the court trial. So
when you attach facts like that to, you have an incompetent attorney, so incompetent that he says, I'm going to stop objecting because the judge is just going to overrule me anyway. An attorney that was subsequently disbarred after this trial because of his incompetency. When you add those two things together, the only 1 + 1 = 2 is that this young man didn't do it. He got an unfair trial, and he's on death row fixing to get killed for something he didn't do.
Exactly.
And when you have Cummings' own father saying out his mouth, you can't believe nothing my son says. He's a liar.
Right.
I mean, the father says that. You didn't make that up. I didn't make that up. I mean, it sounds like something that you would make up because it's just so unbelievable. It's in the police record.
Right. It's in the police report.
There you go.
And
we have to take a break. So let's hold that thought. And I'm sorry. I'll get to some of you all on the line when we get back. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. You need to stay with us. I'm Liz Brown. We're taking a break. We'll be back.
Tula mama, tula. Tula mama, tula, tula mama, tula, tula, tula.
The Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Alliance Financial Group. How do the rich get rich? Let Alliance Financial Group show you how. Call 381-8967.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Houston. Time magazine is reporting that two federal air marshals have been arrested in Texas by the FBI on suspicion of illegal transportation of cocaine. One of them is a former agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration. This episode comes about 2 months after two other air marshals shot and killed a man who falsely claimed he had a bomb with him as he boarded a plane in Miami. The sudden rush to increase the number of air marshals may have played a part in letting some bad apples in. Before September 11th, there were only about 36 air marshals in that force. But since then, that number has grown significantly. There have been a number of reports recently that marshals were having trouble with airline personnel and other law enforcement agencies. And Dateline Baghdad. The United States is doing its part to bring democracy to Iraq. There's a Marine air base in western Anbar province that is in probably the most dangerous part of the country. But inside that base, you'll find a Subway sandwich shop, a pizza delivery place, a movie house, a recreation and dance hall, plus a Hertz car rental facility for soldiers who want to ride in something other than a military vehicle. The strategy of consolidation to about 4 super bases appears to be underway, as a dozen or more smaller installations have been evacuated around the country in recent weeks. The base at Al-Assad may very well be one location for such a mega base. Work is going on now there for more housing, and the base is now so big that it has 2 bus routes inside of it. A military spokesman in Baghdad refused to comment on the intent of that base, but says a base near Tikrit was handed over to Iraqi forces a few months back as a sign that the U.S. thought Iraq was becoming better able to handle its own defense. But within a few weeks, that base was looted to the walls by the same Iraqi units that were in charge of keeping it secure. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update, brought to you this hour by Alliance Financial Group, 381-8967.
Would you like to earn $500 to $2,500 a month? Have you been turned down for a real estate loan because of bad or poor credit? Would you like to invest in real estate but you don't know how to get started? All you need is the right strategy. Let Alliance Financial Group show you how with a free financial presentation this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Airport Hilton Hotel. Seating is limited, so call 381-8967. 381-8967. You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union.
Sears, where else?
That's right, where else? Widescreen television. I'm talking about the big ones. And then the teeny tiny little DVD players. We're talking washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, freezers. And they've got treadmills, and they've got tools. And spring's coming up. I know you need a tractor for something. I know you need a lawnmower for something. Come on, go on down to the Sears in your own neighborhood. Don't drive to the mall. Take out a bank loan to get there. Get to Jerome Williams at the corner of Natural Bridge and Union, the best customer service in town. He will treat you like you are a superstar when you walk in his store. Tell you what, my name is Liz Brown, and I'm telling you, when you get to Sears at Union and Natural Bridge, you tell Jerome Williams, I told you to.
Science or religion, Republican or Democrat, politics, education, crime, or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies. What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan, on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6.
Are those wedding bells I'm hearing? You know what that means. No, not Valentine's Day. It's the St. Clair Bridal Fest Spring Review at St. Clair Square, February 18th and 19th. Whether you're planning an entire wedding or just looking for ideas for your wedding planner, the St. Clair Bridal Fest Spring Review is the place to be. Bridal Fest will have vendors and exhibitors from all areas of the bridal and party industry. See the latest fashions while you explore a variety of displays that are sure to inspire. Take a break in the center court and enjoy the music from Night Magic Entertainment. Don't forget to stop by the Bridal Registry, sign up for the mailing list, and pick up your Bridal Fest bingo card. Fill in the spaces and you could win one of thousands of dollars in prizes to be given away all weekend long. That's the St. Clair Bridal Fest, February 18th and 19th, hosted by St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. Sponsored by Patty Cakes, Night Magic Entertainment, and Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU. Get more details at sbcshows.com. This is a Specialized Promotional Concepts production.
We've found another good old boy network at work inside FEMA. And it's a major reason why the people of New Orleans had no chance to get any meaningful help after Hurricane Katrina. Former FEMA director Joe Alabaugh and the man he selected as his replacement, Michael Brown, knew nothing about dealing with disasters. And associates described both of them as being ethically challenged. So how did they get their jobs? Another fascinating story you will only hear on The Wake Up Call with investigative journalist Russ Baker, coming up Thursday at 9 with Liz Brown.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This is a little something I'll be getting today. If it could. It was more than a tragedy. Emotions be grabbing me. Plane fell from the sky. We trying to figure what happened. Burning churches, fearing God. Who can be so cruel? We all ignorant to AIDS till it happens to you. Just be a man, make plans, listen to your words. A woman's trying to make decisions. We should leave them a choice. Cause who are we to say who lives or dies? Breathe or stops. All this judgment's on other lives.
Who are we to say who lives or dies? Come on. This is Liz Brown, Justice for Reggie Thursday. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. Jamala, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let me get to a caller or two here, and then let's play some details on what people have to look forward to as we continue in this campaign of justice for Reggie. Bob, you have a question or comment?
Yeah, just real quick. I'm glad to have you guys on the show, and it's justice for Reggie. I really believe something's going to come out of it. That's my number one point. My number two point is you guys said something that really shocked me. You said that behind this killing of the pastor, you thought the guy would get the death penalty. And come on now, we're in St. Louis. You get a black killing another black. It sounded like he was a white man. You understand what I'm saying? They don't care about that when it comes to a black killing a black. But if it was a white guy, then you may be right. Can you give me a comment on that, please?
All right, Bob. Thanks for your question and comment. And why would the circuit attorney's office pursue the death penalty on this case?
Well, I think because it's a high profile case.
There you go.
And you're right there. And that was the thing that I constantly told black people when they say, you know, if one of my loved ones get killed, I want somebody else to be killed. It's very unlikely that whoever killed your loved one will get the death penalty. So that's why you need to be opposed to it. One of the reasons. But no, it's a high profile case involving police officers.
There
There you go.
So that's why it's a possibility that it would be pursued.
And also, and high profile from the perspective also of, you know what, we want to send a message out here. And it also, let us not forget the PR, the cynical PR component of this as well. It gives the police department an opportunity to say that all life is valuable to us. We really care about this black pastor. No, you don't. No, you don't. You're just climbing up on his dead body like you're climbing up on other people's dead bodies in order to advocate and say something about yourself. It ain't so. That it just
Absolutely.
Ain't so. So let's talk about some of the opportunities that people have to get involved in the Justice for Reggie campaign.
Well, people remember last week we talked about we wanted to be at the Fox Theater where the play Mother Dia Goes to Jail will be doing a 6-day run, and in fact on Saturday there's 2 shows, 3 and 8, and we've been out there an hour before showtime to get signatures. So if people can do tonight, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, please give us a call at 367-5959. And also, there's been, you know, the hip-hop community has been doing the Freedom Writers Project, and the last final for the Poetry Slam will be at Legacy Books on tomorrow evening. So please come out and support the young people. I think that's going to be around 10 o'clock at Legacy Books. But
that's definitely for young people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's Friday night. Okay, I thought that was a school night.
No.
Okay.
They can come out and this is a contribution of the hip hop community to Reggie Clemens' case. But for folks who
and Legacy Books is
at 5249 Delmar.
That's the corner of Union and Delmar.
Union and Delmar, and they've had a number of rounds and some profound, you know, poetry has come out of that. So we want to be on hand to support them and see who the winner is going to be of the Poetry Slam. So people can get involved by going to the website at www.justiceforreggie.com or calling us at 367-5959.
And the petitions. Let's talk about the petitions.
The petitions.
What is
the petition?
The petition
is to be sent to Governor Matt Blunt, who at this point is the only one who can intervene on behalf of Reggie because he's already exhausted all of his legal claims. And the clemency phase allows the governor to do that. And so we want to send a message to him that this is a case that needs his immediate attention and more investigation, and that we oppose Reggie being executed. So,
and so people can get a petition, go out and get signatures on it from other people in order to compile a lot of signatures.
A lot of signatures.
To send to
Matt Blunt. Mm-hmm. And people can go to the website and find out the outlets where those are. And every Monday we're at the Rowan Community Center at 1401 Rowan, where you can pick up petitions or drop completed petitions off.
And are we going to be counting the signatures pretty soon?
We're going to be counting because next week is our, next week we talked about doing a complete sort of update on all the aspects of the case. So, yeah, we'll have a count then. And so if people have completed petitions, please get them to us.
Okay. And, again, that phone number is?
The phone number is 367-5959.
And how is Reggie doing now? Have you had a chance to talk to him and talk to his mom and dad? And
yeah. They are feeling pretty upbeat because of the love that they've been receiving. They've been on different radio programs and going to speak. And, you know, because of Vera's, you know, quiet strength, you know, mm-hmm. people really resonate with her story. So they're feeling good. And Reggie gets a chance to hear parts of the Poetry Slam because I think one of the radio stations picks it up to a certain point. So he's getting involved in the whole hip-hop thing. Mm-hmm. And so, and as you know, Marlon Gray was also a part of that whole hip-hop and had produced some of his own work. So he's pretty excited about the Justice for Reggie Freedom Writers Project. So we'll let him know next week who the winner is.
And how are we doing as a state in terms of where is the state in their execution and their rush to execute?
Well, Michael Taylor has received a stay of execution. He was next to be executed, and his oral arguments in the Eighth Circuit will be heard April 18th. Mm-hmm. So that gives everybody on death row a little reprieve because generally they do not do another date until the person whose execution
mission has been stayed is completed. So we're hoping that somehow or another that we can stretch that out a little bit longer.
And also with regard to the possibility of a moratorium on the death penalty, there's possibility in the legislature of the state of Missouri.
That's correct. And hopefully in the future we'll be talking to the sponsor of that bill, who's a Republican and who is for the death penalty, but now begins to see that we need to slow the death machine down in Missouri and look more closely at all the facts and factors.
Excellent. Jamala Rogers, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Liz, for having us.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure, and I will see you next Thursday.
Absolutely.
Listen, folks, we'll be back next hour. We're going to be talking about Katrina, so you don't want to miss that. Stay with us.
I will never say that progress has been made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I'm hearing revolution in the air, young brothers. Tough
issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
CNews, I'm Daria Albinger. Yesterday, he broke his silence, and today, the pundits are armchair quarterbacking Vice President Cheney's explanation of his hunting accident. He says he's to blame for shooting Harry Whittington. Cheney also says it was his idea to wait 24 hours before telling the news media about it. Good move, says conservative strategist Babe Buchanan.
He was trying to get the whole story to make certain what he said and what was reported was as accurate as they could do at the time.
But Democrat James Carville says there are too many questions.
Started out, it was Harry's fault. There was no absolutely Zippo alcohol, and it was like 10 birdshot in him. Well, we find out now it was really Cheney's fault. Well, yeah, there was a beer there, and yeah, it was like 150 birdshot in. In fact, one got lodged in his heart.
Whittington still in a Texas hospital. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff is on Capitol Hill again today. It's to talk about a House committee about his budget. He took a beating yesterday from a Senate panel over the government's slow response to Hurricane Katrina. A day after he arrived in the U.S., British native Neil Entwistle is going to be arraigned in a high-profile Massachusetts double murder. His wife and baby, the victims.
Entwistle will appear before a judge. It will be for his formal arraignment. He will enter a plea at that time. His court-appointed lawyer says he will plead not guilty. In the courtroom will be his wife's parents. His wife's parents said they want to be there for the proceeding to look him in the face, eye to eye. This will be the first time they have seen their son-in-law since the slayings almost a month ago, of which he is accused.
ABC's Ron Claiborne in Framingham, Massachusetts. Well, maybe the experts got it wrong. They'd been predicting a housing slowdown, but new home construction was up last month, way up, 14.5%, the fastest pace in more than 3 decades. Could have been the warm weather. Checking the money scope at abcnews.com, the Dow is up 6 points in early going, and the NASDAQ is ahead by 5. This is ABC News.
My wife works hard. The kids are 10, 6, and 3. Our life together gets a little crazy. So I called Applebee's like I've done before. They brought our favorite foods out to my car door.
With Applebee's Carside to Go, you call it in, we bring it out.
Now my wife runs to meet me just as fast as she can. Cause there's something women like about a pickup man.
Applebee's Carside to Go. It's not fast food, it's Applebee's Food Fast at participating locations.
Top three reasons I'm celebrating President's Day with a paintbrush. Number three, the votes are in, and it's unanimous. We're painting the den. Number two, it's time to trade in colonial white for cherry tree red. And number one, I'm saving $20.
Through February 20th, get $20 off 5-gallon buckets of Behr interior and exterior paint, waterproofers, and stains. And $5 off 1-gallon cans. Only at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid by manufacturer mail-in rebate in U.S. only. See store for details.
Congratulations, you've been accepted to the University of Georgia. More than 100 high school seniors recently got that much-anticipated letter, and they were making plans for their freshman year on campus. Well, then they got another letter. It told them that there was a mistake, and no, they wouldn't be going after all. The only thing the school could say, we goofed up. Well, guess who's in the news again? Michael Jackson.
When Jackson's ex-wife, Debbie Rowe, divorced him, she voluntarily gave up her parental rights to the two children they had together. Well, now she's won the right to try and get that reversed with an appeals court here in Los Angeles ruling the original judge never had an independent investigation of what was best for the kids. Even if Rowe wins some parental rights, it may not matter. Jackson's now living with his three children, two by Rowe, one by an unknown mother in Bahrain, which neither has an extradition treaty with the U.S. or recognizes its civil court decisions. Gil Gross, ABC News, Los Angeles.
No winner in last night's Powerball drawing. The drawing on Saturday worth at least $365 million. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Here's another WGNU News update. This report is brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. In the news this morning, work will begin next week on dredging operations on the Mississippi River near the Chain of Rocks Canal. Nicole Dalrymple, a spokesperson for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, says this will help counteract seepage issues during any future flooding.
Following the floods of 1993 and 1995, some issues kind of came to our attention related to the Chain of Rocks Canal with under seepage, and that's when the water kind of starts to penetrate the levee.
Dalrymple says the work will help protect the levee if there's ever another major flood like the one in 93. Extracted sand will be used to construct seepage beams, berms, along the canal. The work will continue through May. In other news, it looks like Praxair may be moving out of its current location. St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay issued a statement yesterday indicating the city will support a change in the zoning of the Choteau property to allow the company to maximize the value of the sale. Nigel Muir, a spokesperson for Praxair, says the company advised the city that if the rezone was approved, the company would drop an appeal to repair the site that was destroyed last summer in a massive explosion.
Praxair has been working closely with the city of St. Louis in recent weeks, and we continue to evaluate possible new sites for our business operations in the St. Louis area.
Slay says any rezoning of the property would have to be compatible with the surrounding neighborhood. The Board of Appeals was scheduled to hold a hearing today on Praxair's appeal, but that hearing's been postponed at the request of both the city and the company. And finally, in Illinois, Governor Rod Blagojevich says he can pay for everything he's included in his 2007 budget. The governor's budget totals more than $55 billion and boosts spending for schools, health care, prisons, and stem cell research. It relies on an expected $830 million in new money, as well as borrowed funds for Blagojevich's $3 billion plan for roads, bridges, and schools. Critics say the budget is fiscally irresponsible and is balanced on borrowed money. That's WGNU News. This update brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. New, the Illinois Lottery's Veterans Cash. 100% of proceeds supports health care services and disability programs for Illinois veterans. Play Veterans Cash today because when you play, everybody wins. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Eastbound 70 at Poplar Street Bridge is a disabled tractor trailer blocking a ramp. Eastbound 255 at Jefferson Barracks Bridge, road construction left lane is closed. Eastbound 255 at Jefferson Barracks. Oh, I'm sorry, that was already a misnomer there. Northbound 270 between Sappington and 44, look for slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 5570 between 4th Street and the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic there. Olive at Woodlake Village, there's a minor accident going on there as well. Southbound Lindbergh at Jamestown, New Jamestown, look for a road construction, have a right lane closed. Westbound Page between Chutes and 270, look for road maintenance operations having one lane closed. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle. Now through February, purchase 4 tires from your local Metro Toyota dealer and receive 3 complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Windy areas of fog this morning. Otherwise, showers, rain, and thunderstorms are likely this afternoon with a high around 60. This evening, windy, much colder, becoming partly cloudy. Rain likely early in the evening, then mixed with snow later. Little or no snow accumulation is expected with a low in the lower 20s. And on Friday, much colder, partly sunny in the morning. mostly cloudy by the afternoon with a high in the lower 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy with a low around 15. And then on Saturday, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 57 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 58. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. And you know, if you want to email me, revolution@lizbrown.com. And you know, if you want to check out some of the shows from the Wake Up Call, no problemo. All you have to do is get to whiterosesociety.org, where the shows are archived there daily. That's daily. This show is streamed at WGNU.net and LizBrown.com. And those are my digits. Those are my numbers. That's how you get to me. We're also my show is also iPodded at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Oh my goodness, doesn't get any better than that. This is an interesting week. It's an interesting week. Kind of a mea culpa's George W. Bush style. You know, forced statement about a forced, yeah, I was there statement is now been reconfigured, contorted into mea culpas as far as this administration is concerned. Dick Cheney never said the word, I'm sorry. He never said the word that he should have told the press right away, that the vice president of the United States shot a 79-year-old man in the heart and in the face. Personal matter is what he calls it. I'll remember to tell that to the police. Y'all remember to tell that to the police next time you shoot somebody. You know, you can't come in here. This is a personal matter. We have Brownie, Mea Culpa, George W. Bush style. What more do you want me to say, Senator? Mea Culpa, George W. Bush style. We have the head of Homeland Security, Michael Chernoff, in front of these committees. Mea Culpa, George W. Bush style, not under oath. And defending what George Bush did and blaming it on the mayor. These are amazing times, and these are the story of Katrina. This report that they call scathing report, an indictment, if you will, against this administration, but saying that there's plenty of blame to go all the way around. The guy with a $1 trillion budget and the guy with a $1 million budget for an entire city share equally in the blame and the responsibility of this. Okay. But what is interesting about this discussion is the fact that, or interesting about this report, is the fact that the report is... The days leading up to Katrina, and then when Katrina hit, it's not examining, oh, okay, the mayor's city is gone. The governor doesn't have the city of New Orleans to govern over anymore because it's gone. So it seems to me that responsibility for New Orleans and the Gulf Coast is now squarely in the hands of this administration. There aren't any buses that Mayor Nagin can send to the Superdome to rescue anybody. Superdome gone, buses gone, city gone. So the responsibility to me seems to lie squarely in the hands of George W. Bush and his administration. So then the question is why hasn't there been a report? Why isn't there a report on what's going on in Katrina right now and who's responsible for mucking it up? That's my question, and I have another one. As I listen to Brownie say, "What more do you want from me?" It's Chernoff's fault. Who is this Brownie dude? How'd he get this job? I mean, for real. We know he's an operative of George W. Bush, but surely there has to be more to it than that. I mean, is there anything that this administration does that's not connected to somebody at the end of the tunnel making a whole lot of money off of it? I mean, you can call him incompetent all day long, but the fact of the matter is these competent people have always been connected to making some money. So we need to have that discussion. Who is? You're doing a good job, Brownie. Who is that? How'd he get the job? Who his hookup? Who is hookup's hookup? And how did they all get hooked up as a result of his gig? Well, I think we need an investigative reporter for that. And coincidentally, we have one. Russ Baker. He's joining us from New York City. Russ Baker, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Good. So, there's just I almost don't know where to start, Russ. But let me pick a place. Who is Brownie? Who is he?
Well, okay. Let me just back up. Even this is one of those stories where even the most basic questions have more basic questions before them. Basically, I wondered that myself, and what I was struck by was, you remember in the days after the hurricane, there was that kind of to-do about how he seemed to have exaggerated his resume?
Uh-huh.
And they said, well, you know, he claimed to be an assistant city manager, but actually he was an assistant to a city manager. And, well, first of all, I was thinking, well, for God's sake, I mean, was that his main qualification, to be the leading American official in charge of protecting us against natural and man-made disasters, including terrorist attacks? Is the guy whose claim to fame that he lied about was that he was an assistant city manager in a small town.
And he lied up to be an assistant. I mean, he didn't even lie up to be the manager. He lied up to be the assistant to the manager.
Well, the funny thing was that even if he had been the mayor of that town, it wouldn't have amounted to anything because he wouldn't have been qualified to do that. I mean, you know, you or I would be have been better qualified to run the agency. This is the amazing thing. Now, what I did, and I guess we'll have plenty of time to talk about it in some detail, but what I did in my report, and I want to give a few times your listeners, if I may, the web address for them to go read it, www.realnews, R-E-A-L-N-E-W-S, realnews.org, O-R-G. And there we tell this full story. Basically, what happened was I was wondering when they said, he said, Brown, are you doing a heck of a job? And then he got rid of him quickly. Bush never gets rid of anybody. He sticks by him because it's an admission of error on his part. So he keeps people. But this guy he got rid of, and I thought, boy, if he's got to get rid of this guy, and we already heard that he had exaggerated these ridiculous little things on his resume, which were completely inappropriate. Anyway, I thought, who is this guy and how did he get this job? And that took me onto this sort of investigative trail of figuring out the deal. Now, what we heard was that the reason he got the job was that he had been the college roommate of a guy named Joe Albaugh, A-L-L-B-A-U-G-H, Joe Albaugh. Joe Albaugh was the first FEMA director under Bush, and Joe Albaugh got that job because he had been Bush's chief of staff in Texas and his campaign manager when Bush ran for president the first time.
So
what you had was, so then what we're hearing is that this guy who lied about being an assistant to the city manager of a small town gets the job because he was a college roommate of somebody. So I thought, well, that's sort of strange. I mean, you know, that can't be the entire criteria for being the primary defender of the safety of the American people. So I started looking into it, and wouldn't you know, they were not college roommates. And not only were they not college roommates, they didn't even go to the same college. In fact, they weren't even the same age. So I said, holy cow, here's the entire media of the United States reporting incorrect information about this guy and then just dropping it. They never looked any further at how this guy got his job. And I thought that was astonishing. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go find out how this guy got his job. So I went to Oklahoma. I traveled around there. I got a hold of everybody I could.
Now, why Oklahoma?
Oh, I'm sorry. Brownie is from Oklahoma.
Okay.
And Joe Albaugh is from Oklahoma. Okay, this is an Oklahoma originating story. And they apparently, the original story was they had gone to college together in Oklahoma. Well, as I say, they didn't. And so I began talking to people who know Joe Albaugh or knew him his whole life. And I said, you know, I see when Albaugh was asked about it, he said, you know, you go back and you look when Albaugh was confirmed at FEMA, he brought Brownie in to be the chief counsel. This was a guy who was put in charge of a legal staff of about, I think it was 60 people.
Okay? 60?
60, yeah.
60 people?
60 lawyers.
A guy that really, for all practices, didn't really practice law.
Oh, we're going to get into that. It's worse than that. It's worse than that. It's completely incompetent lawyer and malfeasance in his legal career. So he brings him in to be the general counsel, chief counsel for this agency, and Brownie then is in charge of 60 other lawyers, I dare say any of which were much more experienced than he was. So anyway, he was brought in first as that, and then what happened was Albaugh promoted him quickly, and he got rid of the deputy director of the agency and made Brown the deputy director, and there was a confirmation hearing for him. And, you know, you see Albaugh saying, I brought him in because there's a quote in my article about it. He says, I brought him in because he's a very experienced guy. I know I can trust, and he's got excellent ethics. He's an excellent attorney. Well, it turned out all those things were untrue, all of those things. Now, what's funny about this is that this guy, he brings him in, And so when Brownie gets in trouble, they say, well, what's the deal? And Orbaugh says, oh, you know, he leaves this impression that they were old friends and that he knew him for many years and so forth. So then I talk to Orbaugh's friends. I talk to many, many people who knew him, including an ex-wife and so forth. And I say, what's the relation between Orbaugh and Michael Brown? They said, you know, we don't know the guy. We have never met, never heard Joe Orbaugh mention Michael Brown. As far as we know, they were never friends.
So all of the people that would have been able to verify that there was a friendship relationship with the two of them, none of them had ever heard of Brownie.
Exactly. And I quote in my article one guy who's one of Orbaugh's closest friends. Orbaugh's a big boating enthusiast, and they would go fishing and boating together. And I asked that guy, and he said that surprised him. He said, you know, I never heard of that guy, Brown. So I began thinking, now we know they're not college roommates. We know Brown has no qualifications, and we know that they weren't even friends. So now I'm saying, well, what did he do? Walk in, some coffee shop and just point to the first person and say, you're going to be my successor at FEMA?
Or did he see Orbaugh murder somebody or something? I mean, how did he get this?
You know, here's what I found out, and I'm not saying I got the whole story, but I got quite a bit. I kept looking and looking and looking for some kind of a link. I kept asking everybody who knew Brownie. Couldn't figure it out. Joe Orbaugh went into Republican politics in Oklahoma in the late 70s. Around that time, Michael Brown, who was from a completely different part of the state, a tiny little town in the Oklahoma panhandle, had come to the Oklahoma City area. He was in finishing up a college in a suburb called Edmond. And in Edmond, he had a professor, a political science professor, who was on the city council of Edmond. The next thing you know, Michael Brown is getting this job as basically an intern to the city manager. And Brown's mentor, this political science professor, then becomes mayor, and Brownie kind of moves up within this small city, if you will. So he's on this sort of fast track in a tiny place. Meanwhile, Orbaugh's working for the state Republican Party and the National Republican Party on local versions of national elections. But there's no indication they know each other, okay? So that doesn't make any sense. Finally, what I discover is that Michael Brown's brother-in-law was the next-door neighbor to Joe Orbaugh.
Okay.
And that Michael Brown's brother-in-law was a business partner with Joe Orbaugh in some kind of weird thing, and what exactly it was, we don't know, although we've gotten whatever documents we can, and your listeners, when they go to www.realnews.org, there's a place at the top or the bottom of the first full page. They have to click through 7 pages of article to read this whole monster thing, but somewhere there it says click here to read original documents, and you can see the documents of incorporation for this outfit, and you see that the next door neighbor's wife is on there, not the guy, which obviously means he's hiding something. His wife is on there, and you got Orbaugh in there, and then you see Orbaugh's ex-wife says that he put her on these different businesses, and when she asked him what all this cash that was coming in, there was unexplained cash going in and out all the time, and he made her sign the checks and do everything, and she said, you know, I'm not comfortable with this. He said, listen, woman, you do it. And she said, well, I don't want to do it, at which point he told her that he was in the CIA.
He told his ex-wife that?
Well, at the time, she was his wife.
Yeah.
She got freaked out, and she divorced him. But anyway, so he's the next-door neighbor of Brownie's brother-in-law. They got this business going, whatever it is. It apparently didn't make any money. And then a little later, you see Brownie forms a company with his brother-in-law, also known as Joe Orbaugh's next-door neighbor, some other company called Campground Development, whatever that is. And that company then hires a lobbyist to lobby the state capitol. Who do you suppose the lobbyist is?
Who?
Joe Orbaugh. I mean, is this like some kind of weird murder mystery? Anyway, so somehow these guys are all doing business together. Then I find out that Orbaugh, his businesses are not going well. I learn that he took a $30,000 loan from an elderly widow who had when her husband died, she had $3 million. She was getting hit up by the National Republican Party to donate, and they would invite her to big events, and she'd get her picture taken with the president and all this stuff. And she kept giving money. Well, she was not only giving money, so much money, to the Republican Party, she also gave Joe Alba $30,000. We have a letter you can read, again, on the website, where she says, it's to her lawyer, and she says, Joe Alba never paid me back. Now, she had $3 million when her husband died, and when she died, she had $50,000.
And how much money did the Republican Party have?
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure they had plenty of hers. Her grandson, who is alive, I interviewed him, and he said that he went with her. He went to the White House. Poppy Bush, George Bush's father, was in power, and she was there, and there was Joe Alba introducing her around. All right, so now you've got these guys. What do you call that? I don't know. Can I say that on the radio? Grifters and grafters?
Yes, you can.
You know, I don't know. I mean, anyway, so now you move forward. 1990, Joe Alba is married to his second wife. He and she declare bankruptcy to the tune of $300,000 in debts that they write off. Okay, now, 1990, what's relevant about that? It's just 4 years later that Joe Alba hires... That George W. Bush hires Joe Alba to be his campaign manager for his first run for governor in Texas. Okay, this is 4 years after this guy has this massive bankruptcy, doesn't pay all these people back. By the way, I find other loans. He takes a loan. He gets a job in the 90s. He's working in the 80s rather. He's working for the governor of Oklahoma, a Republican who's a close friend of the Bush family. And at one point, he's apparently having financial problems. He takes a loan that is guaranteed by one of the largest Oklahoma road contractors, who's engaged in a major dispute with the state of Oklahoma over highways he built that break apart.
Okay, hold that thought. We got to take a break. I'm Liz Brown. We're talking to investigative reporter Russ Baker. Who is Brownie? Doing a great job, Brownie. Stay with us. We'll be back to continue this conversation. Even when the road is hard, never give up. Baby, don't cry.
Been a strange winter. Warm one week and cold the next. All that stress is hard on your roof. Better call Phil Person Roofing at 361-7127 and get it checked ahead of the spring rains. You can get a 15-year warranty on the new modified rubber roof made by GAF, the largest roofing manufacturer in America. Finance that new roof, commercial or residential, with your Visa or MasterCard. Always free estimates. Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127. Join the members of the 7th Police District Community Partnership for lunch as we honor the outstanding efforts of some of St. Louis' finest, the police officers of the 7th District. Blueberry Hill owner Joe Edwards will be the featured speaker, with KEZK's Ed Goodman as the MC.
This is Captain Jim Moran of the 7th District. Show your support by having lunch with us at the pageant on Wednesday, February 22nd at noon.
A limited number of tickets are still available for this event. Don't miss out. For more information or to purchase tickets, call Officer Kim at 444-0047. 314-444-0047.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in 2 to 4 weekday afternoons on AM 920 WGNU. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA and let's go take on the day.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown, and I'm talking to investigative reporter Russ Baker. He's coming to us from New York City. We're getting to the bottom of, in a most amazing journey, of who Brownie is, the former head of FEMA. Okay, so we're getting closer to the George W. Bush connection with Albright.
Right. So basically, see, the missing thing in this whole story is everybody talks about Brownie, but nobody talks about Albaugh.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't separate the two of them. That's the whole point. Albaugh was George Bush's close buddy. When you go to our website, look at a picture. There's Bush and Albaugh. They look like they're almost about to kiss each other. I mean, they were very, very close.
Mm.
So anyway, Now, Albaugh's involved in all these financial schemes. Brownie, meanwhile, after he leaves this town of Edmond, he goes up to another small town, gets a job with a law firm. Basically, the law firm splits apart, and all the members take the lawyers with them to new firms. And they take everybody except two people, one of whom is Brownie. Nobody wanted him.
Mm.
And apparently, I am told that he even bungled a wrongful death suit representing somebody who whose husband had been hit by a train at a railroad crossing, and he lost that one. And apparently it was an easy win. So anyway, nobody wanted to hire him. He became a sole practitioner. Apparently was not successful, and among other things, he stiffed the other people he shared the office with. He didn't pay the rent, and they sued him, and he lost.
Mm.
Okay? So now what you have is you have both of these guys being sued, by the way. And the reason I mention that's important is when they testified to the United States Senate in their confirmation hearings, they had to fill out a form and swear that all their answers were correct.
And they were also under oath as well, right?
Excuse me?
Then they were also under oath.
They were under oath. And in that thing it says, have you ever been a party to civil litigation? And both Joe Albaugh and Michael Brown said no. And we have the documents right there that your readers can link to at www.realnews.org, and they can see that they signed these legal documents saying that, in fact, they were, they said that they had not been party, and then we have the other documents showing that they were parties to that. So, according to a prominent law professor I interviewed, that's perjury. That's a felony.
Wow. Okay, so we're in 1990.
Right.
Albaugh has recently filed $300,000 worth of debt bankruptcy, and George Bush takes him on to be his campaign manager.
Campaign manager in Texas. That's another strange thing. Here's George W. Bush, 1994. He's the son of the recent former president of the United States. He could hire any campaign manager in the whole country, and he hires this guy, Joe Albaugh, from Oklahoma, who really, okay, he's worked on some campaigns, but he has no national presence. He's not from Texas. Texas was full of professional campaign managers. Why did they take him on? I mean, as your listeners, if they read the story, they'll see that there appears to have been some kind of role of Bush's father, who was concerned about Bush's past coming back to bite him. And when Albaugh came in, he was called the enforcer. And his job was to kind of intimidate people and kind of make sure that no problems, the equivalent of the Clinton bimbo eruptions, you might say, none of those things would surface. He's this big, massive guy, and he's sort of intimidating.
Albaugh is. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so when he was the campaign manager, as far as I understand from interviewing people, he was not really the campaign manager. He wasn't really the guy, the strategist. He was not the Karl Rove.
He was like the guy in the movie L.A. Confidential, like Russell Crowe's character.
I don't remember that. But basically, I mean, he did, like, scheduling and, staff organization stuff. But, I mean, anybody could do that. But he was not really the guy running. He was brought in for some other reason.
Anyway, for muscle.
That was his entry into Bush's thing. Michael Brown, meanwhile, has to leave the state. He's got so many problems. And he goes to Colorado, where he becomes basically an investigator for the Arabian Horse Association. And this is the association of people who own show horses. Okay, and he works there for 10 years, and that is his job before he goes to FEMA.
So is it the job with the horse people, was it a legal job or was it an investigator job?
It was his job was basically to check out claims that some of the judges working at these horse shows were not doing their jobs properly.
So it really wasn't legally related at all? So he
very superficially.
Right.
But again, I mean, to go from investigating whether a guy, I mean, what he investigated, actually, his biggest case was an accusation that a particular trainer had done plastic surgery on his horses. You can't make this stuff up. That was his main claim to fame right before he came to FEMA, and he spent 10 years doing that. Anyway, we don't have time to go into all the details. Your listeners will have to go to all that. But getting right to the Bush connection. So Joe Albaugh is now in Texas working for Bush. We know he's had massive financial problems. While he's in Texas, his second wife becomes a lobbyist and is accused of conflicts of interest, where she's taken on all these clients who have business before the George W. Bush governorship. And anyway, that's what they do while they're in Texas. Bush gets elected president. Joe Albaugh is again, quote unquote, campaign manager. Although again, he's not really the manager; he's something else. And you know, Carl Rove, Karen Hughes, those are the kind of people who are running the campaign. Anyway, so Bush gets elected president of the United States, and Joe Albaugh asks to be named head of FEMA, which is completely baffling because he has no qualifications for that. Okay, so he becomes the head of FEMA, and he only brings one person with him out of the entire United States, okay? He's in charge of protecting us against hurricanes and tornadoes and floods and earthquakes and terrorist assaults and everything else, and he chose one person. Who do you think that is?
That would be Brownie.
Michael Brown, Brownie. And he brings him to Washington, makes him the top lawyer.
But how did he remember him? How? Because Brownie had been working with the horses for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
So... how did he remember him? What made him think of Brownie?
Well, that's the mystery, but my conclusion from everything I looked at was that Brownie and Albaugh had remained in touch over the years and had somehow been doing business or favors for each other. And that when Joe Albaugh went into FEMA, I mean, it's pretty obvious from all of his behavior during his years in Oklahoma and so on, he was always involved with things that could be seen as conflicts of interest,
mm-hmm.
and opportunities to personally profit. And so one can assume, why would a guy, I mean, people would think if he'd been he was the Bush's quote-unquote chief of staff in Texas, where again, you know, it didn't mean quite what it said, but he was Bush's, like, right-hand guy. So when they came to the White House, you'd think he would want to be chief of staff or deputy chief of staff in the White House. No, he asked to be the head of FEMA, which has this multi-billion-dollar budget and all these contracts that it lets, and he starts running this place. And the first thing he does is he gets rid of all the experienced people. There were all kinds of professionals that the Clinton people had brought in, really, really skilled disaster people. He chases them out. And he starts bringing in these, you know, 25-year-old a campaign advancement from the Bush campaign. So he brings in all his own people who have no idea what they're doing, and they start changing who they're giving contracts to. Okay, and then he, as soon as he can, once it gets absorbed into Homeland Security, he cuts out. Albaugh leaves the government, and he puts Brown in charge of FEMA.
And how much time had passed? Well, how long was Albaugh there?
He was there a couple of years.
Okay.
A couple of years. So in early 2003, Brownie now takes over the agency, okay? And Albaugh leaves, and Albaugh immediately takes on these big clients who want to do business with FEMA, with the Army Corps of Engineers, with all the Small Business Administration, all the usual suspects we see now in relation to Katrina.
So he's
Halliburton.
He's a lobbyist now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Halliburton is his client. Remember Halliburton?
Who can forget Halliburton?
That's Dick Cheney's outfit. You want to hear something else? Who buys Dick Cheney's house? Joe Albaugh.
Stop.
Joe Albaugh and Dick Cheney are that tight.
He bought Dick Cheney's house in where?
In a Washington suburb, in Virginia.
So when Cheney moved to that mansion that he built for himself, he sold his house to Albaugh.
He sold his house to Albaugh.
Wow.
And if your listeners check out my story, I've got lots of details about the connections with Cheney, and there are a lot. Joe Albaugh was put on Cheney's secretive energy task force. And keep in mind, of course, that Cheney's whole thing was that he had been the head of Halliburton. So now you got Joe Albaugh buys his house, then Joe Albaugh gets on the secretive energy task force that companies like Halliburton presumably have benefited from. We never did find out what happened there. But anyway, Albaugh now becomes a lobbyist, and he's making all this money representing companies like Halliburton. And not only is he doing all that stuff, as soon as they invade Iraq, he starts getting Iraq contracts.
And
Homeland Security.
Okay, so we have the connection to Homeland Security, the contracts from Homeland Security. When do the FEMA contracts start coming in?
They've come in over a period of time, but a lot of those came right before Katrina. Right before Katrina, as the hurricane was already identified on its way, all these companies started signing up with him. I think others signed up with him after it hit. And, you know, they got huge amounts of work. Huge amounts of work.
So explain the conflict of interest in this. Explain what the conflict is. He's a lobbyist. Is this an illegal conflict of interest? Is this just an immoral conflict of interest? What is this?
Well, you know, there's a very fine line between illegal and immoral, and you know this, like the prosecutions of certain members of Congress for taking certain gifts and not
mm-hmm.
others. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's a fine line. It
mm-hmm.
really depends what people want to go after. I mean, if you can establish an explicit quid pro quo, if there is a particular regulation preventing something, I mean, I don't know the exact answer to that, but I'll tell you this. Joe Allbaugh set up this FEMA, brought Michael Brown in, left, started getting contracts from people. He had a direct pipeline into Michael Brown. I suppose investigations would have to establish exactly how particular contracts were let, because almost all those contracts were no bid.
Well, give us some of the examples of some of the contracts that he got that were direct relationship, came as a direct result of his relationship with Brownie.
$500 million to Shaw, which is a big engineering company, to be involved in reconstruction work there. Hundreds of millions to a Halliburton subsidiary to do work there. There are other very, very interesting things. There, you know, in my article, I document all these strange contracts. I'll give you another example.
Well, hold on to that thought, because we have to take a break.
Okay.
I'm talking to Russ Baker. He's an investigative reporter joining us from New York City. We're talking about the unholy trinity, Katrina, Allbaugh, and Brown. This is Liz Brown. No relation. I'll be back.
Just to hear you speak makes me awe you just to see how much of it love would be. Be like a queen.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Jerusalem. The son of Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has pleaded guilty to charges he illegally raised money for his father's 1999 primary election campaign. Omri Sharon will now spend 9 months in prison on charges he falsified documents, committed perjury, and violated campaign laws. He had been a member of the Israeli parliament but resigned his seat last month. The court also said he will not have to report to prison right away because his father is still in a coma from a stroke he suffered on January 4th. Omri Sharon said the problems happened back in 2001 at a time when he was inexperienced in politics and made mistakes because of his ignorance of the process. And Dateline Rome. Some members of the Bush administration and officials from the CIA are going to be summoned for testimony before a European Parliament committee that is investigating allegations of secret prisons and torture chambers by the American intelligence agency. According to an Italian official, the committee will begin by questioning human rights organizations that say they have circumstantial evidence that implicates the CIA in transporting terror suspects from Afghanistan to Poland and Romania. Within the next 2 months, U.S. officials will be called for testimony, and some of the names mentioned include Vice President Dick Cheney, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. The one drawback is the European Parliament has no legal authority to subpoena U.S. officials, so if they refuse, there's not much that can be done. The European Parliament Committee was asked to look into whether the CIA or other American agencies or other countries took part in abductions, renditions, detentions, and torture of prisoners at secret sites in European Union countries or used European Union countries to move those prisoners around. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested, and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues in the African American History Series. On Saturday, February 18th at 12 noon at the Missouri History Museum in Forest Park, explore the historical relationships between various racial and ethnic groups in St. Louis by taking part in the guided Missouri History Museum tour, St. Louis in Black and White. After the tour, celebrate the life of late civil rights pioneer Rosa Parks in the dramatic play Rosa Parks and the Montgomery Bus Boycott. Performance at 2 p.m. Tickets are $5 per person for the general public and $3 per person for Missouri Historical Society members. Reservations are required. Call 361-9017 or go to www.mohistory.org.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen with Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU. Just letting you know that we are moving to a new time from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. every Thursday morning, dedicated to making you mad or making you think since 1999.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
That's right. Big screen televisions, refrigerators, stoves, freezers. How about this? How about a lawnmower? Grass is going to be growing just in a few weeks here. You need to get a wonderful new lawnmower, and you need to get it from Sears right there. Union and Natural Bridge. That's right. Jerome Williams, the best customer service in town. Don't go to the mall. Go to your neighborhood. Get on over to Jerome Williams. I'm Liz Brown. And when you go, tell him I told you to.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This is Liz Brown, 1-877-920-WGNU, revolution@lizbrown.com. Our conversation this morning is about the unholy trinity, Katrina, Albaugh, and Brown. An investigative reporter from New York City is joining us, Russ Baker, to talk about this. Russ, welcome back.
Thank you.
You were telling us about the hookup, some of these extraordinary contracts that Albaugh got as after he left and after he put Brown in charge of FEMA.
You know, there are so many suspect contracts, Liz, and I've had, and I know other people have had, trouble getting these agencies to release contract information. They all claim, well, we don't have it, there's confidentiality issues, you got to talk to another agency. It's kind of amazing. But besides these contracts that Albaugh got, which are very, very clear, I mean, how else would he be a consultant if he weren't trading on connections? And by the way, Brownie, amazingly enough, having left the government, has set himself up as a consultant.
With who?
I don't know.
I mean, is he getting FEMA hookups?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, let me ask you this. If he set himself up as a consultant on Homeland Security stuff, obviously people think that paying him are going to get them access, and the truth is there are a whole bunch of people at FEMA and at other agencies that these guys knew.
And I guess we have to go back and to underscore, Russ, how this, I guess the setup, when Albaugh was there. Because if he got rid of everybody and put his own people in there, that means that he has great pickings from FEMA. He set it up.
Yep.
So in terms of the questioning and the challenging and the questioning of Brown and his contracts after FEMA and Albaugh's connections after FEMA, has anybody question him in any way about this?
They have not. I didn't see any of the senators. I didn't see any of the House members ask anything. And what most amazing to me is that none of them, and this article that we did, has been sent to many United States senators' offices. And despite that, none of them will ask, when they had Brown on the stand, they didn't ask him, why, sir, did you have this job? Why were you in charge of this? Who put you there? They never ask that question. And if you don't ask that question, you can't ask all those other questions about possible corruption.
And one of the other things that you cover in the article that you've written is Brown was not the first person to be put in a position like this. Albaugh wasn't the first person to be put, or wasn't the only person put into positions where they had absolutely no experience, because Albaugh had no experience at all to run FEMA. You talk about it in your article, other examples of that.
There are so many of them. There is a woman who was put in charge a major State Department office dealing with refugees and population control, and her only apparent qualification was she was a Maryland state legislator. And by the way, that already makes her much more qualified than Brown, but Maryland state legislator who was anti-abortion. And so apparently, you know, she did them some favors, and they wanted her in there because she can agitate with the UN not to have any kinds of, you know, all that stuff with the HIV programs in Africa and so on. They always want to stipulate that there cannot be any issues involving anything that bothers them.
About birth control or abortion.
Exactly. So you have her. The niece of General Myers, a former head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who was put in charge of the entire immigration apparatus, formerly the INS. She had a total, I think, of about 5 years in government, a bunch of one-year jobs, totally unrelated jobs.
And the question to ask here, Russ, is that, isn't this what happens in government all the time? Is the Bush administration doing something different than other administrations? I mean, don't people put their friends and colleagues in these positions?
You know what? There's less of that than you would think. The truth of the matter is, when you look at most administrations, it is true that the top appointee in many of these departments is somebody who comes in from outside government, and often they're people who have some kind of an agenda or something, but they are people who have proven themselves at least competent doing something major. I mean, under Reagan, he put in as a Secretary of the Interior a guy named James Watt, who was pretty awful.
And
no commitment to protecting the interior at all. But James Watt was a very smart man who had worked on the other side. He had worked with all these big mineral companies and so forth. And, you know, at least he had experience on that side of that issue. Okay, and so typically they would put people in who had been big business executives, who had headed large nonprofit organizations. They'd run the Red Cross, they'd done something like that. So they knew how to run a large agency, how to communicate, how to deal with Congress, and so forth. So there was usually that. What George W. Bush has done that's completely different is they so little respect the missions of any of these agencies that they will put in people who literally have no experience at all as a favor to somebody. A lot of these choices seem to have something to do with Karl Rove, that they were putting in political operatives. And, you know, there's a recent scandal about NASA, you may have heard.
Mm-hmm.
They had a 24-year-old guy in there telling scientists what they could and could not say about issues that they felt would reflect badly on Bush. They were worried about things dealing with global warming and so forth. And now there's another story in the newspaper today, in the New York Times, about yet another office where people were being told that no reports, no negative reports about anything dealing with the environment could come out until after the election. So the guys who were dictating all that were all these young kids whose maybe first job had been working on the Bush campaign, and they were basically calling the shots.
And tell us about Thomas Scully.
The Medicare. Yeah, well, Thomas Scully is a guy. Now, he's not a guy who didn't have any experience, but you look at what he did. He came from the hospital association of the people who own the hospitals, run the hospitals. He had worked for them. He comes in, sets up the Medicare benefit, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners consider pretty controversial.
No, pretty awful.
Or pretty awful. And he sets that up, and then he leaves. And he leaves and he becomes the guy for the drug companies.
Mm. So, okay, you've done this report. You have it on your website. You've sent it to senators. They haven't moved on it. What's now? I mean, what happens now?
Well, I'll tell you this. All I can do is what I can do.
Right.
I mean, The Real News Project, if I may just explain briefly,
sure.
This is a new organization I've started with a bunch of other really good and talented and conscientious journalists. We believe that journalism in this country has to be changed. We believe there has to be much more investigative reporting of this sort about everything. We want the real story on this stuff, and we think that as long as we all have to take paychecks from huge media corporations, that we're not going to be able to get to the bottom of things. So we're starting this nonprofit. We're looking to the public and foundations and so forth to support us. People go to our site. I hope you don't mind my saying so.
Absolutely.
They
not.
Can click, and if they want to send us donations, they can rest assured all the funds will be put to work to do these kinds of stories. And we think that if we keep doing these kinds of stories and more and more and more people start going to our site and reading it and then forwarding this stuff to their elected officials, going to their local news organizations, go to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and ask them why they're not covering this thing.
And
don't they think people ought to know about it?
And I think the thing that I like about the website and the thing I like about the report is that all of the sites that you can go and find all of the supporting documents, so that's the best way to be able to read an article. How did you draw that conclusion? And you can go right to it. And I really like that about the site.
Thank you very much.
And I want to thank you very much, Russ Baker, joining us from New York City. Thanks for this story.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care now. This is Liz Brown, The Wake Up Call. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Until then, you know what to do. Stay strong.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress has been made. You stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution. The air feels brighter.
That matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. Michael Chertoff better have a thick skin. The Homeland Security Secretary is getting a grilling for a second day about Hurricane Katrina, and this time it's coming from a congressional committee that's supposed to be talking to him about his budget.
Before a House committee, Michael Chertoff was warned by a senior Democrat that emergency first responders are losing faith in his department.